Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Effin. It's Wendy Snyder. And it's Tuesday, and it's the show. So we're glad you're here. 312-981-7200 if you'd like to participate.
How are you, Bill?
I'm great. Why, what have you heard? What are people
saying? I've heard
you're
great.
People are saying otherwise?
I've heard you're great. I want to say hi to Maggie and Molly. They are two dogs that listen to us religiously.
I have found that more dogs are listening to us than when we first started, but less people, and I'm fine with that. We're going to do more dog-related topics on the show. I wish we could get any chance of Steve Dale, Kevin? We get Steve Dale?
I'll see what I can do. He's a tough kid.
I was at a funeral on Saturday, and Jim's cousin, Tom Cusack, passed away. And there was no room at the family table, so Jim and I sat with
dogs?
Strangers.
No, I thought there was a dog table.
No, and it turns out that the strangers were big fans of ours that listened to us every day.
Yeah.
And so I started talking to Kathy and her husband Jeff and her son Will and her daughter Lauren, and she was kind of geeking out a little bit, saying, "Oh, I love you and Bill. You guys are great." And the daughter kind of threw under the bus and said, "Yeah, when she goes to work, she leaves the radio on so Maggie and Molly, our dogs, can listen to you guys."
Oh, the dogs are listening.
So I just wanted to say, whoop.
You know, a couple of months ago, I noticed that Steve Bertrand in his news does one very high-pitched story at the end of every cast, and I didn't know why, but now it all makes sense.
Right. They call them PPMs, but it's just not peas who wear them.
For
puppies.
Pooch.
Puppies are pooches.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Maggie and Molly enjoyed the EAS test. They just texted me.
Oh, I bet. That part is only for dogs. Humans aren't even supposed to hear that, so good.
It's just amazing who you run into and where. It really is. So thanks to all the listeners
who
listen.
That's a compliment. If, you know, if we're doing something that dogs are enjoying, that's a nice little plus. That's a good bonus.
Doesn't that make you feel any more love towards dogs?
Yeah.
They're listening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very much. Very, very much. You know Dave Ennett.
I have met him. I love Dave Ennett's facial hair now.
That's what I wanted to bring up.
Very sexy.
Dave Ennett is the sports director here at WGN Radio. He is well-respected. He is loved throughout the galaxy. He started a couple of weeks ago. He started growing a beard, and it looks really good on him. He's a good-looking guy anyway, but you throw a beard on him, he looks like like a supermodel.
He looks really good, but do we call that a beard?
That's a beard, yeah.
Because it's scruffy. I mean, a beard is Jake Arrieta to me.
Well, it's still, if not a beard, what would you call it? Because it's still, it is scruffy, but it's a beard. It's where a beard would be.
Right? It is.
It's on this part of his face.
It's a placeholder for a beard.
Right. But here's what I wanted to bring up. And I've noticed this, not just about Dave, but about anybody who goes from not having a beard to then, in a week or two, having a beard.
Ro did that,
included.
Too.
Ro Khan did that.
Did you shave today?
Oh, yeah, I shave every day. I always shave.
That's why you don't have a beard.
That's the main reason I don't have a beard, yeah. Here's a beard tip for the kids listening. The best way to grow one, just stop shaving.
Good tip, Bill.
A lot of times a beard will grow in. But here's what I noticed. When people all of a sudden are talking to somebody who has a beard that they're not used to having a beard, and you did this yesterday, but you're not the only one. I've seen thousands of people do this. They do this thing with their hand where they, on their own face, they just move their hand over their face.
I did that?
You did that yesterday.
I was checking my beard to see if it was coming
in. But it's like a way of saying, well, you now have a beard. But the person who has a beard, they always know they have one. No one's ever shocked when, like, if what if David seen you do that and then he felt his own face and went, what's going on with this? I shaved an hour ago and now I've got a beard going.
We're just creatures of habit.
No, I know. I'm not blaming you. I always see people do that. Even if somebody has like a 1 or 2 day growth, somebody will just pass them in the hall and just kind of make that thing with their hand. Oh.
I did do that because I said, I like your beard, like as to show him where the beard would be.
If it was.
I wasn't like rubbing to see if I had one because I had my face waxed.
Oh.
Actually threaded. But I did kind of do that. Like, I like the beard. Like, I didn't have to do the motions because he knows where a beard would be
right.
on him.
Yeah. But everybody falls into that same.
You're right.
Oh, there's a beard on your face. That's the best place for one. It'd be weird if you rub part of your back. You've got hair on your back.
There's a picture floating around the internet of you with a beard, like a full beard. And that is very dark colored and your hair is very blonde. But that happens.
For a 2-year period, looked just like Lamar Hoyt of the Chicago White Sox. Just like Lamar Hoyt.
I don't know what he looks like. I'm going to have to look it up. But is that why you shave every day now? Because you look at that picture on the internet and it reminds you?
I'm not sure. I think I've told you this. If I go a day or two without shaving, I really look destitute. It doesn't look like I'm growing a beard. It looks like I've hit on hard times.
Like people, Homer Simpson when he shaves and then all the little hairs pop up already.
It's the strangest thing. If I go, honestly, a day, if I'm walking down the street, you see people like reach in their pockets for change. They want to give me a couple of quarters.
Do you take it?
Yeah, I take it. Why wouldn't I take it?
Have you ever gone like a full weekend? When's the last time you went a full weekend without shaving?
Oh, years.
Really?
It's been a long time. Yeah.
You are really into manscaping.
I don't know.
Let's just stop it right there.
Right. We won't give out any more details. I don't know. Some people pull it off better than others. Some people with a couple of days growth, it looks better on them. For me, it just looks like...
Because you look like a little kid with a beard.
Yeah, because I look like a child with a beard.
Oh, too bad the circus isn't going to be running anymore. You could have joined.
I could have added my own tent.
Bertrand, how long have you had facial hair? You got the goatee going?
2000.
Is that when it started?
There was a blizzard over, I think, New Year's Day, and I grew a beard then.
For extra warmth?
No, I don't know. I think I just thought, why not? And I had a beard for a while, and then shaved that off. It was kind of a red beard at a time.
I'm Red Beard.
The pirate. The pirate / newsman / travel agency.
Or the rock line host, wasn't he, the guy?
Yeah, for a little while.
Yeah.
Here's another beard growing tip, and I've got over 1,000 of them.
Look at you.
I had one for 2 years, and then I went to Las Vegas, and I decided I'm going to surprise Terry, and I'm just going to shave it off, right? So I'm in Las Vegas, and that was it. I shaved it off, and here's what you never want to do is shave your beard off in the middle of the summer because your tan lines look ridiculous. It looked so crazy because most of my face was tan except where my beard was white.
And that was a full beard, man.
I know. It looks so ridiculous.
That is a great tip.
I never thought about that. Because you just assume, well, the sun is still hitting my face, but the beard blocks, it blocks the sun rays. So
do it in the winter.
I still had a beard, but it wasn't with hair. It was with tan lines. It looked so stupid.
You had a vanilla milkshake beard.
That was my rapper name at the time. I was working at the Sands Hotel as Vanilla Milkshake.
How come you're not still there?
I don't know.
Hi, Ted. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
We're doing beard talk, Ted. Bill's got all the tips for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a good friend I've kind of lost touch with, but he used to have to shave twice a day. It was a very odd thing. He would shave in the morning, and by 5 o'clock, he was halfway to Jake Arrieta.
That's why they call it 5 o'clock shadow, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was more than a shadow; it was almost a forest. I mean, it was crazy. And if you went a couple of days, the local radio station would put out like Wolfman warnings. I mean, it was crazy.
You shave twice a day sometimes, don't you?
There are times where if there's something going on at night, some sort of function, I shave in the morning when I get up, and then I will shave again around 5-6 o'clock because it's awful.
That's too much shaving.
That's how virile I am. I can't help it. I'm like the brawny the paper towel guy come to life. It is a lot of work. It is.
Do you shave every day, Ted?
No, but then I don't have to worry about being hunted down by people looking for big game. You know, I'm pretty safe in that regard.
Good for you.
Some people are just hairier.
Yeah.
That's right.
I try to shave my legs every day in the summer, but I will admit that sometimes in the winter you can skip a day or two.
Right.
You've got that option. I mean, take advantage of it while you can, right?
But sometimes, Wendy, she'll have an intern do it during the show, and that's always awkward.
That's not for air.
That's awkward for everybody.
All right, Ted. Happy Tuesday.
You guys are on video now, too.
Thanks,
I'm covering
Ted.
The cameras.
Right.
See ya.
Thanks,
take
Ted.
Care. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then there's a lot more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we were talking about beards, and someone said, please tell Bertrand he has a fake alternative beard. That's not right.
Oh, that's not nice.
A fake alternative. Oh, I get it.
That's not nice.
A little slow.
Yeah. I like a goatee on a guy. Why don't you try that?
Too scholarly for me.
It would go with your smoking jacket.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, it's really smoking.
Oh,
you should put that thing out.
What happened? A quick congratulations to the movie La La Land. I don't know if you saw it, but it was nominated. I think it did it break the record or tie the record?
It tied a record.
It tied the record. How many nominations, Steve?
14, I believe.
14 nominations. Have you seen it, Steve?
Yes, I have.
And your thoughts?
I really liked it. I liked a lot of things about it. I don't think it was really clear cut what happened when it was over, but and
isn't that interesting? Because I like
careful though, guys.
I will be so careful. I don't want to give anything away. But there are some times where the ending of a movie is a little ambiguous, and you say to yourself, "I think it means this, but it might not." But with that, I'm 100% sure I know what happened at the end. But then I've talked to other people about it, and they go,
"We'll see it differently."
That's not what happened.
I like to be hit over the head with the ending. You know, I mean, like Birdman.
Right.
Spoiler alert.
Right.
I don't know. Everybody gave accolades to that movie, and I liked it, but it was not like crazy good like everybody said it was.
Yeah.
Did you like Birdman?
Hated it.
Yeah, I didn't like Birdman either.
Yeah, that's so weird.
And this one, I think the only ambiguity, Bill, is in the glance that they exchange.
Right.
Okay.
No, I understand. I totally get that. I totally get that. After the movie was over, I saw La La Land earlier this week. After it was over, I went to Internet Movie Database because I wanted to know more about the guy that wrote it and directed it and produced it. And there's a picture of him. He's 31 years old. He looks way younger than that.
31, and this is what he's done.
He's 31, and he makes this movie.
We should just turn off the mics now.
And he did it because the studio was so thrilled with him with Whiplash, because he also wrote and directed Whiplash.
That was one of the
great.
Best movies ever.
And
seriously.
They just recognize the fact that this guy knows how to tell a story, and boy, does it show on the screen. It's just, it's such a magnificent movie. And I know it's all so subjective. I know people can see the exact same movie and go, "What are you looking at? Because I just saw that movie and I don't like it at all." But I was entertained from the first frame to the last. I was just so in awe of what they were pulling off on the screen. I thought both of the leads in it, Ryan Gosling was great, Emma Stone was great.
I fell in love with both of them. I seriously did.
Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? But the amount of effort, like he didn't know how to play the piano, and then you see him in this movie.
Careful.
And he didn't, well, people know there's piano in it, don't they? There may or may not be a piano in the movie, and if there is one, he's great on it. But if there is one, you can see why he would ignore the piano. And just, you know, it's ridiculous. We've talked about this in the past when we talk about movies. You are suspending belief when you're watching a movie. But
although you have a difficult time doing that, quite honestly.
But not in this. I bought every say. The fact that they just burst into song at a second's notice.
That could happen. I've danced in the sky before.
It rarely happened. It can happen. I'm not saying it can't happen.
So you
rare.
Need complete disbelief in order to suspend it?
I don't know what it is. I so totally gave into the fact that it was a story being told through song. Like, there was never a time that I go, who would just start singing at a moment like that? Like, when it was over, I'm like, yeah, that I can see that. I could do that.
My son Dylan is 14, and he goes, I want to see La La Land. Do you think I'd like it? And I said, that's a really tough thing to figure out. He said, I like musicals. I think Emma Stone is hot. And I said, I think you'll like it then.
Reason enough. If you go in with just the thinnest belief that Emma Stone is hot, I think you walk away happy.
I just love that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, without giving anything away. I hope I'm not. If I start to give something away because you've seen it, say stop talking because you're giving something
pressure.
Away. There's a part of the movie that deals with a fork in the road. And by that I mean, if you go one way, this happens. But if you go the other way, something else happens. And I think part of the charm of this movie is, they've discussed this in other movies, how if you just do something a little bit differently, it alters everything. But I think this movie captures it, because who amongst us hasn't had a time or two, and it could be a job, it could be somebody that you marry or don't marry, it could be the decision to live in a city, but your course of destiny is altered dramatically by that one split-second decision, and I think this movie illustrates it better than anything I've ever seen.
What was your fork in the road? Because I do have one.
Mine is... There was a major, when I was doing stand-up comedy, there was a big comedy contest at the Improv in Los Angeles, and I won in Chicago, and then I won in the Midwest, and there were 10 finalists across the country, and I was one of the 10. And then we all
congratulations,
performed.
By
thank
the
you.
Way.
It was years ago, but thank you. We all performed at the Improv in Los Angeles for a bunch of very famous people and industry people, and I came in second, which is great. I didn't think I'd ever make the top 10, but I came in second. And the guy who ran the contest came up to me after the show and said, is there any chance we can get you to stay in Los Angeles an extra week? They want to take a look at you for the Tonight Show, to be a guest on the Tonight Show.
Holy moly.
And I had a college job that paid way too much money to pass up. And I said, I can't do it now.
Oh, my God.
I'm here.
Dude, that was your only shot.
Could have been.
This isn't the moment to say that, Wendy.
Sorry, right. But...
I hadn't thought about that, Wendy, but yeah, I guess maybe it was.
Well, I'm happy because I'm sitting here with you now.
Bill, I can see it was a torturously difficult decision.
I'm serious when I say this. It's one of those things that, like, every once in a while I go, what if I had said, you know what, even though I needed that money at the time and the college thing was a lot, I really should have stayed that extra week and done the Tonight Show audition, and who knows what would have happened as a result of it. But I do, from time to time, I do look at it. Now, my life has turned out way better than I deserve. It's turned out fantastic, so I don't regret it. But I always wonder, what if? You have one, too?
Yeah, it's nothing that great.
Can we take a break? And will you tell? Because
yeah.
Everyone has one, don't you? I think everyone does.
Yeah, Bertrand, do you have one in particular that you can share after the news?
I suppose, I can think of one now that you say it.
But nothing's going to be as great as yours was.
Well,
God.
I wasn't trying.
Squandered opportunity.
I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to dominate.
I'm not trying to make you feel bad, but what were you thinking?
It made sense at the time.
Okay, now try to make him feel bad, because I want to hear the difference.
All right, a break and then more of this. Stick around. Steve has the news, and then we'll get back to those fork in the road moments in your life where you go, do I go to the left or do I go to the right? It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Time grabs you by the wrist.
I think Kevin's up for a bonus today. He found the most fitting possible song for what we're talking about. It's Bill Leffin, it's Wendy Snyder. We're at 312-981-7200. La La Land, it was announced earlier today during the Academy Award nominations, has 14 nominations. This ties an all-time record. One of the themes of La La Land is, again, I want to be very careful because I don't want to give anything away here, but it has to do with something I think most of us experience, and that's a fork in the road in life. You come up to something, and it could be a job, and it could be the person you're going to spend your life with. It could be the city you're going to live in. It could be the kind of car you buy, whatever it is. There's some major decision that you go, boy, if I had just done it a little bit differently, how would have things turned out?
This is my fork in the road. When I was at Triton College on their radio station, I wanted to get a job on the radio, like a real radio station. And there was a publication called Radio and Records back many years ago. And I put an ad in, like, you know, tape and resume, contact me. And I got a call for my first job offer in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I was explaining to them, it was a rock and roll station. Yeah. Their night chick was leaving. Uh-huh. And they're like, we have an opening. It would be nights. Chattanooga's a lot of fun. Well, I'm not one for cutting the apron strings, so right there it was like, I don't know. So I don't know that I really wanted it, but I said, here's the deal. I'm just, you know, at a college radio station. I don't have a big savings account, and I don't have a car right now, so I don't know if this would be the best opportunity. And the guy's like, you can use the station van until you get up enough money, and then I'm envisioning myself driving around and, you know...
The cigarette mobile.
Well, just a big station van, like that would be cool.
Yeah.
You know, go to meet somebody for a date and nice wheels. Thanks, man.
Right.
So I'm like, God, thank you. That's pretty amazing. And I said, I don't have a real big savings account because I'm just kind of starting the job search right now.
Yeah.
So an apartment is something I don't even know if I have enough for a security deposit right now. Oh, that's okay, man. You can live with the music director for a while. And I'm like, wow, they are bending over backwards to give me this job. And I didn't have anything else. And I'm like, I got to get a real legitimate job in radio. So I really thought about it for a while. Part of me wanted to go and think this was going to be a real exciting opportunity to at least try it. You can always come home.
Sure, of course.
But I couldn't pull the trigger. And then a couple months later, I did an on-air audition at the Loop radio station here in Chicago, and Greg Salt called me and said, you weren't that good, but I see potential. And you know Greg.
Wow, did he build
you know
you
Greg.
Up. Yeah.
And how would you like to start working at the Loop? So then I keep thinking, man, my life, it really took the right path.
You picked the absolute right door. You did.
But I didn't know that at the time,
no,
and you
no
never
way to
do.
Know. There's no way to know.
So that worked out, thankfully.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I met my husband at the Loop. So you, I met you at the Loop.
But you couldn't possibly have any regrets based on what
none.
You just said. But at the time, you're like, wow, that's, there's an opportunity there.
And the first one, you know, you're kind of
sure.
anxious to get a job in real radio.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, I'm just going to throw myself in.
But you had to have known when you placed that ad that more than likely the takers would be from other cities, right? You didn't expect it to just be Chicago.
No, I knew it wouldn't be Chicago. That's why, you know, it was nationwide, but I thought I'd get like maybe a town in Illinois, which is funny because I had an audition at a Peoria station and they didn't hire me.
Oh.
And in DeKalb. Oh. WDEK would not hire me. And so then I'm like, Chattanooga comes up. Oh my God, finally, you know, I got a bite. But I
that
said,
explains that DeKalb dartboard that we have in our office. I could never understand why you had that by your desk.
Screw you, Cindy Crawford.
Right. Steve, you have one also, huh?
Yeah, and listening to your two, I wonder if most people have a positive remembrance of one, because yours are both positive.
Yours is not?
No, mine is too.
Yours is? Okay.
Way back in 1984, I was trying to get a TV internship at Channel 9, and I drove down from Milwaukee, was going to school there, took the writing test for the internship for the TV, blah, blah, blah. And as I was leaving, the woman who was personnel, Ann Corbillis was her name, she goes, hey, while you're here, do you want to fill out a radio application too for an internship? I'm like, yeah, sure, why not?
But that wasn't like your first love or your ambition.
Wasn't my goal at all. And I didn't get the TV internship. I got the radio one.
And
that
the rest
worked
is
out
history.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
That well, couldn't have worked out better.
Yeah, perfectly. You know, I was overstating it a little bit, but really super good.
I think really super good. You know what's good news, I think, for all three of us is that our fork in the road moment is job related, because if it's love life related, and there's a difference between job and career, I think, because we all were heading in a specific direction.
Yeah.
But I know people who had a chance between two different, not just jobs, but careers. And in one case, they believe they picked the right one. And in one, they're like, I dread every day what I've done here. I'm stuck in a job I don't like, and there's no way out. You know, and that's a terrible, that's no way to live your life, is doing it. I mean, I know, sadly, many people are in that predicament, but
I know.
How sad is it if you're in a job where you hate it every day? It's terrible.
Well, you know me, I'm not very good at making decisions. I bring everybody into it. What do you think I should do?
Right.
And I really remember talking with my mom about it. What should I do? I mean, this is Chattanooga. Well,
please go. Please go.
She didn't even want me to move out of the house.
It's a van. It's a van.
Well, that's. But how accommodating was.
Boy, they were doing everything in the world to get you to go out there.
I know. And then I felt really bad because I said, I guess I'm not ready.
Well,
and I wasn't.
But you know, don't you really deep down know if you're ready to jump in an ocean or not?
Yeah.
I mean, you just know. That even though that doesn't seem now like a huge move, that was a huge move for you at the time.
And I was pretty young.
Yeah.
I was like 22 years old.
Then that's a big move to go to a different city. You don't know anybody there.
Yeah, I'm not good like that either. I need people.
But you got the van.
That's the one regret I have.
It smells like cigarettes and pudding in here. What happens in this van?
A lot of bosses, you know, put you on their couch. He wanted you just to move in with him.
Right.
Well, that was my concern, too. Yeah. You know, like,
that was a little shady.
I know, but, you know, they were trying to accommodate me, and I thought, God. And plus, getting turned down from DeKalb in Peoria.
Right.
It's like, you know, Pete McMurray can succeed in Peoria, and you don't want me? Really? Hey, buddy? It's because I didn't have a tagline?
Maybe that's it. You got to have a tagline.
But two people, you know, saying no thank you, and then all of a sudden somebody wants you, it's like, maybe
that's
I should
big.
Do it.
Right. That's tough.
I don't know. Fork in the road. Hi, Brenna. Did you have a fork in the road?
A major one.
What was it?
I used to work as a secretary for a state office where they discipline attorneys. And there were a lot
I bet it's busy.
There were a lot of opportunities to become investigators, but they never looked at the women for that. We were just, our be-all and end-all was the typewriter and the telephone.
Mm.
So a friend of mine was a trooper, and he brought me an application and said, here, I think this is something you can do. Well, this was back in 77. So next thing I know, I'm at McCormick Place with 3,000 people taking the written exam. And next thing I know, I'm down in Springfield at the Academy.
Really?
And 28 and a half years later, I'm retired, and it was a good run.
That's fantastic.
That is excellent.
That's exactly what we were hoping for, was that kind of a story. Good.
Yes, definitely. So thanks for listening.
But look at the
thanks
way.
Thanks for talking.
Look at the way. That's a perfect example of fate just kind of being in the right place at the right time and making that quick decision of, do I want to do this or do I want to do that? It paid off in spades for you. Great, Brenna. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I like the feel-good stories.
Yeah.
I think we have time for one more. Glenda's on the line. Hi, Glenda.
Hi. How are you?
Great.
I'm calling not about me, but about my father-in-law.
What happened there?
Back in 1952, Eisenhower was elected president.
Yeah.
And he asked my father-in-law to become his press secretary. My father-in-law at the time was working as an administrative assistant for a senator who had just been elected, and my father-in-law felt this, loyalty to the senator and turned down the job.
Really?
Secretary.
And how much regret did he have for the years that passed? A lot?
You know, he never told us this story in a regretful way. Not me, because I was the daughter-in-law, but his children used to laugh at him. Oh, my God, Dad, look what you did. Look what you could have had. Look, but, you know, I think he was happy with the life he ended up with, because Eisenhower actually ended up appointing him to a job at the State Department.
That's not bad.
And because my father-in-law had been an editor of a major newspaper, the Philadelphia Inquirer, mm-hmm. he had the background and ability to edit what's called the State Department newsletter. It's a magazine published by the State Department for all their thousands of employees around the world.
It turned out okay then,
yeah,
it sounds
did real
like.
Well.
It turned out okay because it was not a political job. He lasted through every president after Eisenhower until he retired, which was after Ford was president. And so he had a really good run. But between that and the job that Walter Annenberg was the original publisher of TV Guide, he also offered my father-in-law the job to become the editor of TV Guide back in the 50s when it first started.
Man, everybody wanted him. Glenda, we have to run, but it sounds like everything turned out okay for your father-in-law. He was a desirable man.
Exactly.
Thank you so much.
And his name was Forrest Gump, by the way. He found his way into every major story. That's amazing.
Right, Forrest, right.
Right. All right, let's take a quick break. Bridget Carey from CNET will join us in just a little bit. Stay here, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, it's a Tech Tuesday, and the world of tech never stops, Bill, never stops at all. So we go to Bridget Carey, CNET senior editor and host of the CNET Update. Bridget, what is going on?
There's always something dramatic going on with Samsung, so that's also back in the news again this week.
Good news or bad news?
Well, after all this time, Samsung's finally talking about what went wrong with that Note 7, you know, the one that just spontaneously catches fire.
I think that's what went wrong with it. They're not supposed to just spontaneously catch fire.
They spent months investigating, and they had these special labs set up where they tested 200,000 phones and 30,000 batteries, and they came to the conclusion and announced that the first time around, it was bad batteries. And the second time around, it was a different reason, but bad batteries again. That left everyone going, really? Bad batteries twice?
Mm-hmm.
Just that? I can break it down in pretty simple terms. When you think of one of those lithium-ion batteries, they look like just a regular black rectangle in your phone. But inside, there are these layers of positive and negative bands that are kind of like a jelly roll, like a Swiss cake roll. You know, they're kind of rolled up in there. And they have to be so exact, and the roll has to be just perfect. And then the first time around, it was squished in the corner. And if you're positive and negative touch, that's not good. That's what causes a charge.
Just like a car battery, right? On a smaller scale, but it's the same principle, right?
Yeah, yeah. And when the positive and negative touched, because they were all squished up tight in the first batch, Samsung, you know, goes to another battery manufacturer, and they go, quick, make us more, hurry, hurry, hurry. And when the second one made them fast, well, they also didn't even make the layers right, and they were touching in a different way. And in some cases, were missing, like, insulation. They were just, it was way too fast. So the whole thing was a mess, and to reassure us that it'll never happen again, they're saying we're going to have more battery checks. We're going to do more things. We're going to have X-rays and spend more time charging and discharging them. And, you know, that leaves you going, okay, should you have been doing that in the first place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why didn't this happen with other phones in the batteries that they used?
I mean, if you just take a step back, obviously there's a lot of pressure to beat Apple and do things better and do things faster. And the battery's got to be, you know, more juiced up than the last one, right? Because otherwise, why would you buy a new one? So all these, you know, pressure that Samsung puts to hurry, hurry, hurry and be better, 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 like maybe they, you know, went too far and needed to spend more time being careful. And I think this time they will. They normally come out with their new phone of the year, the S8, in February, and they're not this time. They're delayed, obviously, with all this testing. You know, they're set back. They did say they are still going to make a Note 8, so they're keeping with that brand. They believe the brand's strong enough; people will give it a chance. I think just being super technical on the battery problems may not be enough for consumers, because if you talk to anyone who works at a cell phone store, the customers come in going, Samsung, that's the one that blows up, right? You know, they don't really know, you know, what went wrong. They're not studying all this stuff. The brand is pretty tarnished. They have to do a lot to kind of repair that. And I think it'll take time more than anything.
All right. Well, that's good news. Samsung wants you to trust them again. Good luck with that. A Christmas gift that my younger son Dylan got this year is the Amazon Echo. That's where you talk to Alexa, correct?
Yes.
I have been having fun with that, by the way. I listen to the boys upstairs, and they're like, Alexa, what's the weather? Alexa, I'm asking you a question. They fight over Alexa.
Oh.
Well, you now can, you don't have to call Alexa's name. That's the new thing with the Echo. If you want to live that Star Trek dream, you can just say, computer, what's the weather? Computer. Tea, Earl Grey hot.
Now, Bridget, I'm not a math whiz, but it takes longer to say computer than it does to say Alexa.
More fun,
so are we moving forward or are we moving backward?
If you're getting anywhere closer to Star Trek life, you're moving forward.
Oh, are we? Okay, good, good.
You are engaging forward. No, I'm a dork. I love Star Trek. So, yeah. this is a fun little thing. And actually, the Amazon Echo always had some Star Trek little hidden Easter eggs. So if you go home and ask it to give you tea, Earl Grey hot, or beam me up, you know, it has some smart responses.
Oh, I'm going to try that. Are there any plans to work in any other things like Lost in Space? Who would you ask? Who was the...
Well, Dr. Smith.
Right. So Dr. Smith, what's the weather in LaGrange?
Right. And then he would panic.
Danger, danger, Will Robinson.
Right.
Oh, no. All right, so that's, if you're a Star Trek fan, this is the best news in the world, because you can be just like Captain Picard and do what he did. All right, I like that.
To the bridge.
Right.
Well, excellent. Thank you so much. What else is coming up on the CNET update for today?
Well, we're spending some time being dorky with the Echo thing.
Can't wait to watch that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. And there's always some weird things going on. I know Snapchat is also being talked about. They're working on telling publishers, because Snapchat's kind of a place people go for news now, you know, with major news publishers, you know, posting articles on there. But they've been a little risky, a little racy, a little sexy. And so Snapchat's trying to tell publishers, hey, cool it with the fake stuff, the clickbait stuff. And if it's a little too sexy, we're going to make sure that people who are under 18 maybe can't see it. So, of course, if you tell the truth about your age.
Which who does?
Right. And so that's a look at how Snapchat's trying to be more serious as they maybe prep for an IPO and get on the stock market.
Bridget, how does Twitter feel about the fact that Donald Trump is constantly putting their company's name in the news with his late night tweets? Are they on board with that? Do they like
that? They couldn't be happier, I would imagine.
Saying the company name, so that's a good thing, right?
You know, when there was that massive meeting of all the big tech CEOs with, you know, Donald Trump before he became president, you know who wasn't invited? The guy who runs Twitter.
Yeah.
So I don't know how the relationship is.
He'd be lost without Twitter.
But yeah, it is his favorite medium to be able to speak the truth, and unlike the media.
Right.
No alternative facts on Twitter.
Mm-mm.
Right.
All right, Bridget. Thank you. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
All right, thanks.
That's Bridget Carey from CNET. It's right there on your computer, for heaven's sake. We'll take a quick break and then some news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, sitting to my right and across from you is noted pet expert Steve Dale. If anyone on the planet knows and cares more about animals, I would like to meet them. Hi, Steve. How are you?
People had GPS, they could figure it out.
Yeah, it'd be easy.
Left, right, I don't know where I am.
That's
here.
All right.
How are you?
We're great. I didn't realize Steve was on the show today, because remember, we started the show saying hi to Maggie and Molly, the two dogs that listen to
us. Yeah, dogs are listening to us, Steve.
Hi, so, Maggie and Molly.
Good, you better be on your best behavior.
God, really? I would try. You know, this is the reason why you're number one with dogs.
Yeah.
And cats, by the way.
Yep.
Cats don't care.
Yeah, they do.
They do what they want.
Turtles,
they
by the do. Way, Big Mike and Mike fans. Don't listen to us.
No, turtles are, no.
I have two tortoises. Well, I don't. Dylan does. But, you know, I have been breaking up fights between the two tortoises.
Really? What are they fighting about?
Food.
Well,
one bites
happen.
The other one's neck. So some guy at PetSmart said, hey, why don't you get two food bowls? And I'm like, duh, why didn't I think of that? Problem solved.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But they do listen to Mike and Mike.
They love
really
Mike and Mike.
Sad
it's the
about
weirdest
that.
Thing. Steve, what exactly is a dog's purpose?
The movie. So I went to...
Did you see the trailer?
I've seen the trailer, but there's a backstory to this that you're not going to be happy about.
I know, but I can't see that movie. God, I'm weepy when I see that.
Well, there are a lot of people that are now saying, I'm not going to see that movie.
I know.
So I saw the trailer like you did. I got weepy. I don't know if it was La La Land. I was, you know, going to see that movie, or maybe the Star Wars movie, and then saw that movie, and I was the trailer for it. And I was unaware they were coming out with a movie. Their PR people, for whatever reason, I didn't hear about it.
It's
Dennis
Quaid and his friendship with the dog, right?
Yeah.
That's the story.
Well, I think what happens is, yes, he grows up with this dog, and then the dog passes away.
Spoiler alert. Although it shows everything in the trailer.
Well, it would figure if he, you know, sadly, when you grow up, but it's, you know, if you have a dog from the age of six...
And then you're a grown man.
You'll outlive the dog. Yeah, of course. That's what happens. But this dog affects his life, as often does happen, by
teaches
the way.
Teaches him how to drive.
Yes.
There's a scene where he teaches him how to drive.
Does the income taxes for him.
Right.
All right, you're both.
He goes to jail as a result.
I'm boycotting both of you.
They have their own company together. The dog is the CEO of a company.
Yes.
It's a rough job.
But I'm bum. So, but really affects this guy's life. In
That's
some very,
animal cruelty, by the way. What Wendy just did was animal cruelty.
In some very touching ways.
Right.
And then the dog comes back, I believe, as another dog to help somebody else.
Does
as
this happen
dog
a lot?
To help
yes.
It does
oh,
happen?
No. In the movie, though, it seems like it happens more than once.
Yeah.
In real life, yeah.
I don't know either.
Often,
you know?
It could.
I
mean,
well, what happens with our dogs when or cats?
Or people.
Did
I don't know what's
back?
Up there. Yeah. I know I'll be up there and you'll be probably down there, Bill.
That's fine.
I'll wave to you from up there.
All my friends will be there, so I don't care.
You're going to have more fun.
Yep.
As long as he's telling jokes and people are having fun, it doesn't matter. So I thought, wow, this is an amazing movie. I looked into it a bit. There's a book that it's based on that everyone who's read the book says they weep as they turn the page.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be an incredible book. I would love it because it really... speaks to the heart of what dogs are all about.
Mm-hmm.
And then several days ago, actually, a video comes out. Someone on the set took this video on their phone of a dog trainer. There's one scene in the movie where the dog rushes into rushing water to save someone, a German Shepherd dog. and the dog clearly. In the video, you do not have to be a certified animal behavior consultant, as I am, to look at this video and say, this dog does not want to go in the water. I mean, the dog was frozen still, and the trainer eventually pushed him in. After several times trying to coax him in,
that doesn't
the
seem
dog
right.
wasn't having it's not right. And the trainer pushes him into the water. Toward the end of the video, it's unclear, but it seems the dog was having trouble and might have begun to go under. And they had to cut the cameras, and someone came in to save the dog. Again, that's unclear. But the video is out there, gets millions of hits. All the animal welfare organizations say, what the heck is going on here? This isn't right. You know, at the end of the movie you watch when it says no animals were harmed?
Right.
I was on the board of that organization for many years, the American Humane Association, and they have someone on set. I've been on set. I've seen what they do. And when the representatives say, stop, this isn't right for the animal.
Yeah.
The director, I've never heard of a case where the director doesn't stop. I am told the representative wasn't on set at that moment. Why the representative wasn't on set,
especially
I don't know.
Especially when it involves a dog for pretty much the whole movie. That seems crazy.
So whether this person had to go take a phone call or they didn't alert the person, because they film a lot of scenes that the representative isn't needed there for. You know, so whether they changed the shooting schedule, I have no idea. But American Humane says, we're going to look into this. In the meantime, representative, I don't know the person's name, you're suspended until we understand further what happened. The movie is just saying the representatives from the production company saying, we're sorry, we're also looking into this. Now, is it the worst thing ever that can happen to a dog? No, it's not right. I'm not defending it. It's not appropriate training. And a professional trainer, they said in rehearsal, the dog just jumped into the water. After seeing this, it's hard to believe that. But whether that's the case or not is irrelevant. At that moment, to me, at that moment, the dog clearly didn't want to do it. And to push the dog into the water isn't right. Now, thousands and thousands of people are going to boycott the movie. They actually postponed the movie premiere. They didn't have it.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm thinking, okay, the movie, I'm assuming from the trailer, and, you know, I'm no movie reviewer, but it seems that the movie's a really good movie.
It looks really fantastic. Yeah, yeah. I was going to go see it, and now
I'm still going to see it.
Well, you know, you have child actors. If they don't want to participate in a pool scene, you don't just push them in.
True. That's absolutely true.
Get in the water, Dakota Fanning. I don't want to go in the water. You're going in the water, Dakota Fanning.
You mentioned that at other points this dog jumped into the water, but maybe the dog wasn't feeling well that day or just had some skittish feelings at that moment. I'm just pissed now.
Yeah.
And Steve, you say maybe the representative was off taking a phone call.
Who knows?
I've been on movie sets. A shot like that could take hours to set
up. That's right.
I don't know how long of a phone call they could have been at.
And that's their job to be on the set.
Yeah, but if they're not notified that today we're going to do this.
Oh, maybe they purposely let them out of the loop.
Some say that. Maybe. Some say it was on purpose. Some say, you know, production schedules change. I don't know.
Julie has a good point, and she wants to jump in. Hey, noted pet expert Steve Dale is here. Julie, noted listener.
How are you? When I saw the TMZ video on the news, it occurred to me that for someone to want to film what was going on, it had happened in the past. Maybe not with that dog, but with others who were being used in the film, and he wanted it documented.
That does make some sense, like he was ready with the camera, although if he noticed it was going on.
Why not stop it?
Well, I think, so I wrote about this in my blog, Julie, and wrote exactly what you said. I mean, I wonder a couple of things. On one side, maybe this person had the phone ready because it's happened before in the same movie.
Right.
And this production person said, this is ridiculous, people have to know. On the other, having seen this sort of thing before in movies, being on this particular board of directors, sometimes people don't have the best intent. And why was the movie, I'm talking about the phone video, released a year later? I mean, the movie was shot a year ago. So why didn't this person release the video a year ago?
Come forward before and say, there's a problem here. Stop production on this movie instead of waiting now. That's a good point.
And someone said, maybe. You'll get the most bang for the PR buck if you wait till right before the movie is released. I mean, what happened apparently happened. At least part of it is pretty clear.
God,
part of it
makes me so mad. Like a big dog movie, you think this was the movie that would treat animals well.
I know.
Does it say no animal was harmed or abused in
The first thing I did when I heard about this, I went to the American Humane website to see if it indicates, because they do list the movies, and they just don't list that movie. So they don't say a sort of thumbs down for that movie, that the movie failed. They don't say that no animals were harmed. They just...
There's no endorsement at all.
Right. Huh. As of a couple of days ago. I haven't looked for a couple of days.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. I agree with Julie. Good
all right.
point.
Sure.
That just really frosts my butt.
You want to take this one, Steve, or should I? No? All right. We'll take a quick break. While bakers come in and finish off the frosting job.
And I've got a coat on in here already. It's cold.
I don't mean cake frosting.
I assumed you meant cake frosting.
I don't really know the derivative of that, but I thought it was fun to say.
I thought you meant the temperature of the room.
That's what I meant.
All right, we'll take a quick break. And then who knows what will happen next.
I don't know why your producer, Kevin, is shaking his head.
He's leaving. He's quitting. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We are chatting with noted pet expert Steve Dale. You can read his blog, stevedale.tv. Can I just read something else, too?
Yes.
Noted basketball player Jimmy Butler leads the Bulls to Orlando, and WGN-TV Sports is the only place you'll hear Neil Funk and Stacey King with the Hometown Calls Bulls Magic tonight at 6 on WGN-TV.
Whoa. Noted pet expert Steve Dale sitting right over there telling
sitting?
Us... To, sitting? Right over I'm there, si- yes. No. he's telling us the story.
Cheerio.
Can you bring Steve a Cheerio, Steve? He's starving.
No, I was talking British.
A Dog's Purpose is the name of the movie coming out, but the backstory is not a pretty one. One of the dogs working on the movie was treated unfairly throughout the making of the movie. You know what this reminds me of? Do you remember years ago there were a couple of acts in Las Vegas that used various animals? The most famous one was a guy, Bobby Borsini, who was famous in Las Vegas for his orangutan act. And it turned out there was all kinds of footage of him being incredibly mean to the orangutans when they weren't on stage.
Yeah.
And they shut that down. And that was a long-running, huge, huge hit in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I don't think great apes should ever be used in shows like that, is my opinion.
Yep.
You know, and speaking of which, you know,
That just really, really disgusts
me. Sure.
Well, how about the elephant thing, you know? So right now, I learned this, and it's being announced on your show right now. There's what I did not know. I was down in Springfield talking about feral cats, and I was talking to the representative, an impressive young man, Mark Ayers, from the Humane Society of the United States. And what I did not know is there are still touring shows in this state that take elephants periodically from town to town.
Yeah.
It's shocking to me.
Yeah.
That could be. And up here in Lake County, there's a show, if you call it that, when he told me about this, I thought, I really did. I thought, you've been talking to Bill Leff. Because this really can't happen in real life. Only in Bill's mind.
A lot of things happen in
that. That's what I mean. That monkeys ride on greyhounds.
The buses?
No.
Because that's not a big deal.
Where would they keep their transfers?
Do they have to get a ticket?
They don't have pockets,
Steve. How small is their luggage?
Your scenario did not pass muster with Wendy and myself, Steve.
I prefer ketchup.
Please excuse yourself.
They're riding on Greyhound dogs?
Greyhound dogs.
Like in a racing format?
Yes.
Well.
And I thought, I mean, I...
They're the perfect size.
No. Monkeys should not be doing this.
Maybe the greyhounds enjoy it.
I don't think so.
How do you know if you ask them?
I would, yes, and I am certain.
How much money could somebody win in a race like this?
I don't think
it's... Do you bet on the monkey or the greyhound? Kevin.
So many questions, Steve.
There are a lot of questions. And we talked to Bello Knock, one of the clowns who was in the Ringling Brothers circus.
Interviewed a clown, yeah.
Like the biggest clown.
Okay.
You think you're a noted pet expert? He's a noted big clown.
He's a clown among clowns, Steve.
Yes.
And he said his family has been with Ringling Brothers. He's like seventh generation.
Yeah.
And he never saw them mistreat elephants. And, you know.
So I wrote about this as well, and I talked about it with Patty. You know. I really think that the people in the circus think that they're doing best for thought they were doing best for the elephants. I really do. For a whole lot of reasons, including economic reasons.
They got paid in peanuts. I ruined it, kind of. Damn it. Go ahead. Sorry.
Not only the elephants, but all the other animals that are in, you know, the tigers or the lions. I mean, it's beneficial for them that they be healthy, right?
Yes.
Because otherwise you have to go out and get a new one. That costs a lot of money.
Retraining them costs
all that stuff. So it is most beneficial. And I believe that the people that travel with these animals develop a bond with the animals. However, go to a zoo today and watch a zoo that does have an elephant.
Brookfield doesn't have elephants.
No, they don't. Nor does Lincoln Park. And I am not debating whether zoos should have elephants or not. But elephants or any other animal. We were in Mexico at the Leon Zoo, I don't know, 6 months ago. And they took us sort of on tour backstage. And we saw a tapir getting a blood draw. And all they did.
It sounds like a joke.
All they did was offer food on one end and ask the tapir to lift a back leg on the other end, and the tapir was trained to do this. They used a stick to point. They don't touch the tapir. It's like clicker training a dog, actually.
Boy, or that's amazing.
Using a whistle for a dolphin. And I saw them do this with elephants. So if zoos can do this, and they've been doing it now for many years, and in fact, my next WGN Steve Dale's Other World podcast is with Dr. Lester Fisher.
Oh,
who was yes.
Park in the Park.
Yes.
I love him.
That's the guy. And we began it with that song that they always used to play, the
green
unicorns.
Green alligator, some long-necked geese, mm-hmm.
some hokey-back camels.
Humpty.
So, what?
Humpty-back camels. Hokey.
It's humpty-back camels.
Hokey.
They don't make
hokey-back
camels.
Aren't
hokey.
Some are.
Steve.
So he told
Steve,
me.
Steve, a monkey in
I'm
a Greyhound
ashamed.
Bus just gave you a thumbs down and passed by the window and gave you a thumbs
that
down.
That wasn't the finger, actually. I saw.
Whatever.
Dr. Fisher said, he had this anecdote. He said,
how do you stay on track with us? I'm sorry.
Said,
go ahead.
I cannot do a radio show that would ever equal me being on with you guys anywhere for all the shows that I do all over the country.
Thank you.
It's true. So, Dr. Fisher told me that in this podcast that kids would come to the zoo and see him and recognize him.
Yeah.
And spontaneously, he said this happened too many times to count, sing that song.
Sure.
And follow him all around the zoo singing that song.
Like the Pied Piper.
Yes. Yeah.
That's pretty sweet.
And I believe Les Fisher, who's friends with Betty White, they're both in the animal world, mm-hmm. right? She was on the board for decades of the Los Angeles Zoo. They knew one another. They were friends.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you're the only person that can look Betty White in the eyes and say, hey, how you doing, kid?
He's older than Betty White.
Yeah.
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 Steve, great to see you. If people
what were we talking about?
Animals, pets.
Okay.
Right. If you want to know more about Steve's world of animals, the best bet is
stevedale.tv.
That's the way to do it. Thank you, Steve. Have a good week. We'll take
you guys
a quick
are the
break.
Best. The best.
Oh.
You're hokey.
We'll take
yes, I am. Say hello to Andrew Hayes.
We'll tell him.
He's a great
hi.
Guy. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
A quick break, then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder, and we're thrilled that you're listening. If you want to participate, if you have any questions, comments, ideas, 312-981-7200 will get that done. I want to just quickly say on our Facebook page, as of about an hour ago, we posted video of something that happened not last Saturday, but the previous Saturday. Drake Bell of Drake and Josh, we had him as a guest on our show. Very nice guy. He is
very talented. Can I just say that?
He is talented, isn't he?
Because I went that evening to see him play guitar,
yeah.
And I loved him as an actor. I know he's a musician, but he was great.
Good guitar player, good
honest
singer.
To God.
Yeah.
Great.
He came by my house. I collect toys. I collect action
and
figures.
Guests. And you guests. Collect guests.
From now on, one guest a week will get an invite to my house, and they'll come by, and we'll have toast. So we're going to start that with Drake Bell. Drake collects, he's got a fascination with all things Disney. He likes Disney memorabilia, and I've got a bunch of vintage Disney stuff. So he came by my house on Saturday and saw my toy collection and videotaped it, and a highlights reel is now on our Facebook page. It got, on his page, it was only up for 4 or 5 days. How many hits, Kevin, do you remember?
Last I checked on the YouTube page was like 95,000.
95,000 hits in 5 days.
Yeah, and you had 15 people who didn't like it out of that 95,000.
My wife and my daughters.
All right, that's three.
That's three out of the 15. I think my wife didn't like it more than once. I think she came back and posted another negative comment.
What did Drake say when he was in here? You guys, he wore a vintage Disneyland sweatshirt,
yeah,
which was really cute, because then when I saw him later at night, the tats were showing and the sleeveless shirt showing the guns.
Mm-hmm.
They're very small guns.
Oh.
But anyway, he had that Disneyland sweatshirt on, and you love Disney, so you guys started talking right away about that. And what did he say? He's been there like 800 times or something?
It was in the high hundreds.
Yeah.
He goes there all the time. And
I've never been to Disneyland, and I feel I should go.
It's fun. I mean, it's got a more, you know, it was built in the 50s, so it's got a more vintage-y feel.
I think I would like that. Disney World is too big for me.
Everything at Disneyland's a little smaller because they're cramped for space, you know? So if you want to see the toy collection, the much-touted toy collection, there's a videotape of it. It's about 4 minutes long. I won't give away the ending. But it's there on
is there a fork in the road?
Yeah, it's like La La Land without all the talented people.
Yaya Land.
If that's what you didn't like about La La Land, all the singing and dancing and talented people, watch this video. I think you'll be thrilled. Speaking of videos, there's a guy in the news who's got a video of himself on YouTube. His name is Mr. Beast. And what Mr. Beast has decided to do, and it's all captured on videotape, you can watch it in its entirety if you want to, is he counts from 0 to 100,000.
And how many hits does he have?
Kevin, do we know how many hits Mr. Beast has?
I bet millions.
Probably millions of hits. I don't think anyone would watch this in its entirety, because you figure out at around six how it's going to end.
And the problem is it's 23 hours long, and it should have been over 40, but he had to fast forward certain parts.
It took him 40 straight hours to sit in a chair and count from 1 to 100,000. He did it.
But he's almost got 7 million views
on
this.
7 million.
G. Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah.
But that doesn't mean somebody sat through the entirety.
No,
they
no,
just
no.
clicked on it. So
right.
Going, what's with this guy?
And be able to make you feel better, 35,000 people didn't like it.
Out of 7 million, that's not bad.
I do feel better knowing that. But at what point do you stop liking it? Like, you're interested in it, and then at what point do you go, well, this is ridiculous. It's a man just counting to 100,000.
After two?
I would say right around two, right? We want to save everybody the hassle of having to click on it yourself. We'll just play you some of the many, many, many highlights of Mr. Beast counting from 1 to 100,000. It starts out, he kind of throws out a little bit of a weird disclaimer at the beginning. He knows how silly this is, but he does it anyway. Listen to some of the highlights.
I'm about to count to 100,000. You don't believe me? Just watch this video. All I want to say is just tweet the video out, share it with, you know, maybe Keem or Scarce, and if you're a YouTuber, just help a guy out. I mean, think of the pain I'm about to get. Screw it. Let's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
Kevin, you can stop it there.
Now, I want it to keep going. It's kind of soothing.
At the beginning, he starts out with one of those exhaustion sounds like, I'm about to count up to 100,000. Like he's considered this, and he realizes the time element spent, 40 straight hours. But he does it anyway.
But his intro is not very entertaining. If I'm tuning into
right.
the beginning, I could hear him going, oh, what am I going to do? But he trips over his time. It's like, you,
right.
that's your first impression, dude.
You got to sell it.
Yeah.
You got to go, I'm about to do something that, while it's ridiculous, I don't think it's ever been done. See how long you can last with me while I count to, you know, build it up, make it sound exciting. He sounds exhausted before he even does it.
Yeah.
How do you train for this? Like, what do you have to do to train for this? I know if you're running an Olympic event, if you're doing a marathon, you know, if you're in any kind of contest, but with this, do you just, like, a couple hours a day just build up to this? How do you do it?
He went pretty rapidly. Can we check in on his progress?
This is approximately 4 hours and 38 minutes into the video.
25,372, 25,374, 25,375, 25,376, 25,377.
Ready or not, here I come.
Right. The longest game of hide and go seek in the history of mankind.
That's how you practice.
Right.
You play hide and go seek.
But even with hide and go seek, you have the element of surprise
an end.
And an end is you either find the guy or you don't find the guy. Remember on Monty Python years ago, they had the world championships of hide and go seek, and it took one guy 12 years, 6 months, 3 days, and an hour, and then the other guy tied him exactly, so they had to have another round.
That was great.
Yeah. All right, so
Where is he now?
Yeah, Kevin, check in on him one more time.
We're
Mr.
looking
Beast.
At about 10 hours and 44 minutes into the video here.
51,927, 51,928, 51,929, 51,930.
You're saying 50, by the way, for the kids. You say 50, you don't say 50. Yeah, in honor of 50 cents. 51,944,
51,945.
This isn't even entertaining.
51,948,
51,949. Not even a little bit.
I mean...
Did he use cue cards or did he memorize this?
It sounded like he got tripped up for a second.
A couple of times. What if he did, like right toward the end, he goes, wait, what was my last number? And he had to start over. That'd be awful.
I bet he had all the numbers written out and crossed them off as he said them.
Got that one.
I can't remember five items on a grocery list. How would you remember all those numbers? Where is he now?
We're about 18 hours and 45 minutes in. Let's take a look.
It's 2016, it's 2017, it's 2018, it's 2019, it's 2020.
Is he drinking?
2021,
2022,
if he's not drinking, he should be drinking.
It's 2026, it's 2027.
Oh, start over.
See,
you got to start over.
Count.
He flubbed it. You got to start from the from one.
And I don't mean count in the way like it doesn't count, but because he is counting.
But he's running all of his words together. He's like count slurring. Not counseling. He could right. do some counseling, but he's like slurring and counting at the same time.
Yeah, that's not. This is
that
terrible.
Doesn't count. This should not be in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Is he?
I wonder.
Because you know that was our goal
to be in the Guinness Book of World.
No,
Records.
No, to interview people who have been in the Book
right,
of
right,
Guinness.
Oh, right. I don't know for sure that they have this as a category. Because if you set your mind to it, he just counted up to 100,000. Took him 40 hours. You could, that's toppable.
Do a million or forget it.
Yeah.
Start
at a million.
Can we check in?
I think I have the end here, so let's take
a look. Oh my God.
I think.
99,986, 99,987, 99,988, 99,989, 99,990, 99,991, 99,992,
you can hear in his voice the excitement.
99,994,
almost
99,995,
smile.
This is when he has an aneurysm right here.
99,997, 99,998. Make sure you like the video. Drop a comment. 99,999.
Oh, you lost his place. Do it. Do
100,000.
Spoiler alert.
Now, my guess is, and they don't have this on the videotape, but my guess is this is where the marriage proposal started flooding in. Because what woman wouldn't find that attractive?
All
you can count up to how high? Oh, man.
7 million views.
7 million views of a man counting up to 100,000.
Very sloppily.
He's wearing the same clothes in the entire. There's no way he could have done this in one sitting.
Yeah, you could, Kevin. You
40 hours?
So? Yeah, you could. Couldn't you?
I couldn't.
Once you commit to it, you can't stop.
Yeah, but there's things called editing now, you know?
No, but I like the idea of him just.
That's even funnier.
Now, he obviously couldn't have gone to the bathroom. Right? He had to just sit there and do this.
Was he just on camera? Just the
Kevin, watch the whole tape and see if he leaves at any point.
Can I take the days off or
no.
Okay.
No.
Isn't that what a GoPro is for? So you can go while you're
right, that's why it's called
doing
GoPro.
It.
All right, a quick break and then Wendy and I are gonna count to 100,001. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. You know what that reminded me of? Hi everybody, it's Bill and Wendy, and it's WGN. You know what that reminded me of? I don't know if you did this when you were a kid. But every year, a friend or two and myself, when we were 8 or 9 or 10, would decide that we were going to dig a hole and see how far down we could get. And I don't know what our end result was. I don't know what we were hoping for. But about once or maybe twice a summer, we would all get shovels and we would just start digging.
In whose yard?
That was the problem, is that my mom used to say, I'll kill you if you do this in our yard. I will kill you.
I'll bury you in that hole.
Right. Start digging. I'm ready.
I did it in my sandbox, but there was, you know, after the sand, there was mud, and I kind of gave up because it was harder.
Yeah, we did it at the beach.
You did at the beach.
Yeah,
it makes perfect
sense. Because you could dig to like the other side of the world.
We thought we were going to China.
That's what in the back of your head is, I bet if I dig deep enough, or at least Chinatown, which is much closer, but it's way out that way, so that couldn't work. It's not,
you have to go straight down,
right. But in our heads, we were like, well, let's just see how far we can get with this. I think there was an element of that with this guy who counted to 100,000. But the difference is we were nine, and he's a grown man going, I'm going to try to count to 100,000.
And he set his limit. Like, he should have just said, I'm going to count for as long as I can until I drop.
Right.
That would have been more exciting.
Right.
We know he's going to 100,000.
Yeah,
we
there's
know
no
there's
surprise.
A, there's a Guinness record for that?
That's what we were trying to determine, if that's even in the Guinness Book of World Records. If there is a record like that, then go for it. Get your name in print in the Guinness Book of World Records. But if there isn't,
right,
you just spent 40
Otherwise,
hours
you
counting.
Otherwise, you could be Count Von Count.
Right. Do you remember when you were in grade school and a kid would say, how high can you count up to? Like, that was a challenge. Because whatever number you say you can count up to, you're wrong because you know what the next number is.
Right. And then when you get older, it's, what language can you count to?
Right.
How high?
Right.
All right. Back in September of 2007... Dateline, Birmingham, Alabama, Jeremy Harper counted from 1 to 1 million allowed. It took him 89 days to count up to 1 million. All footage was streamed live on the internet. The feat raised more than $10,000 for Push America, which was his charity. And I don't know exactly what that is.
He counted to a million, and none of us knew his name until just now.
No.
I guess why would we? Is that an accomplishment or not? It kind of is. But then when the 40 days is over, you go, I just spent 40 days counting to a million.
It's an accomplishment for a kindergartner.
Right. Not a grown man. Although he raised money for charity, so some good came of it.
I'm trying to find some audio to see if he counted a little more eloquently than this guy.
That guy was just rushing through it.
At
3,492. Yeah.
I mean,
at some point, it stopped becoming even English.
Yeah, it wasn't fun.
I want to tell you about a show business feud. Do I have time to do this? Can I get this done in three or four minutes?
Sure. If not, we can continue the rest of the story after lunch.
Yesterday, we played a clip of Aziz Ansari. Aziz Ansari, in addition to being a good comedian and a good actor, was the host of Saturday Night Live last week, on Saturday, of course. During his monologue, he made, I don't know if you remember this, but he made a joke about Chris Brown. He equated Donald Trump with Chris Brown. Chris Brown, by the way, not happy about the joke.
Well, it's like, you know, I don't know what he began it with. Like if
I've got it here. I'm sure this is Aziz Ansari.
He was great.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty funny. I'm sure there's some people that voted for Trump with reservations, Aziz Ansari said on Saturday. I'm sure there's a lot of people who voted for Trump the same way a lot of people listen to the music of Chris Brown. They say, hey, man, I'm just here for the tunes. I don't know about that other stuff. I just like the dancing and the music. I don't condone the extracurriculars. Now, this is referencing Chris Brown's
domestic.
I guess we have to say alleged domestic abuse with Rihanna
charges.
And other girls. Chris Brown found himself in a lot of hot water after slamming Aziz Ansari over his Donald Trump joke, Aziz Ansari's Donald Trump joke. The party singer was criticized by fans of Brown, and they took to Instagram to slam Ansari for comparing Trump to him during his monologue. I told you that part. During Ansari's nearly 10-minute speech, the comedian and master of none star told the audience that the U.S. president is basically the Chris Brown of politics, and his slogan, Make America Great Again, is like Brown's single, Those Blanks Ain't Loyal. Now I want to get to the part
it was
of
funny
what...
I'm sorry it was funny
all right and so here's what Chris Brown said though listen to this tell me how offensive
I bet
this
isn't
is.
Funny
Chris Brown, who assaulted his former girlfriend Rihanna in 2009, apparently was not amused by Ansari's joke and posted a video of the monologue on Instagram with the caption, F no, somebody tell Aladdin to hop off my blank.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Chris, this is making it worse.
It is making it worse. But he has a knack for that. Anytime he's in a controversial situation, he finds a way to make it worse. Several people took offense to Chris Brown's post, commenting that Ansari is Indian and Aladdin is Saudi Arabian. That's what they were offended by. He picked the wrong way to slam him.
Yes.
Despite the backlash, Brown slammed Ansari again in another Instagram post. Can't Blanken catch a break, Brown said. This N-word said that Donald Trump is the Chris Brown of politics. I swear I'm moving. I'm getting the F out of here. Don't effing trust anybody or anything you see. Even salt looks like sugar.
I feel like going like this.
Right.
That is just so
I know.
Deep.
I know. All right, so there's your latest show business feud. You've got Chris Brown in one corner and Aziz Ansari in the other.
Did Aziz say Ansari?
He did not say Ansari. Thanks, Kim. Hi, everybody. Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder here on WGN. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. You can call that number or text that number. We leave it up to you.
Or just think that number.
If you think that number, you'll somehow magically be connected to us.
I'll bet you that's it. Ask Alexa to call 312-981-7200.
I just want to mention this very quickly. Right before the break, I had mentioned that there's a video that I'm in that shows my toy collection. And all the comments are kind of similar. And I think you can
get a
guess.
Life.
They're not quite as pointed as Get a Life, but many of them make mention of the fact that my wife must be thrilled. And in all honesty, although she's not thrilled, there are a lot of worse hobbies I could have, right?
Hookers, gambling, drugs.
Tried them all, Wendy. All in one weekend, and it was not for me.
Because on a much lesser scale, you inspired my husband to have a Star Wars room.
You're welcome.
I'm not really thanking you.
Well,
we saw your toy collection.
It borders on being a sickness. It really does. There's no doubt about that. If you have that collector gene in you somehow, it's almost like a sickness.
But that is, I believe, handed down from generation to generation. Jim's dad worked at McInerney Chevrolet. He owned it. It was a family business, so he came across a lot of celebrities, sports stars, and their basement is like completely filled with sports memorabilia,
right.
Football cards, baseball cards.
Right.
So Jim's dad is a collector.
Yeah.
Therefore, Jim is a collector.
Passed on down.
Dylan is a collector. He collects like Marvel things. He has a bunch of different collections. Michael collects guitars.
Yeah.
I collect Facebook friends, and then I delete them when I get mad at them.
That'll teach them. Good for you. So if you want to see the sickness in motion, it's right there on our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. And feel free to put something like, oh, your wife is a saint, because I know she's a saint. There's
yeah,
no
but
question.
That makes me mad that why can't, I mean, you are such a well-rounded well, most people are well-rounded, but seriously, why does anybody care? That just is a meanness out there.
I don't think anyone's being mean, because if it were me looking in, I would say essentially the same thing. Why does your wife allow it, or if she does allow it, and she does, luckily. You know, it's
allow
like,
it? That just sounds so wrong.
Well, because I've used up some prime real estate in the house for this collection. I really have.
You do have. I mean, Jim has one room, and the boys have to share a bedroom because of that, and same with your girls, but you have more than one room. Terry is a saint.
She is a saint.
I'm going to put that on the
first ballot. She will be in the Hall of Fame for Saints on the first ballot. You'll
see. I'm going to write a comment saying just that.
Please do. I will join you. I'll write the similar comment.
John, you have a question for Bill?
Yeah, I just want to know if he ever seen I'm 51 years old. I had this thing called Johnny Quarterback.
Oh, yeah. I don't have Johnny Quarterback, but I remember Johnny Quarterback.
You do, because I have never seen one again. It was probably the most dangerous ever, because if you got sprung on the head with that thing, you're done.
What was it?
It had a hand on it, and you sprung it back, and it threw a football to you. You'd run, it'd throw you a football like 10 yards. Yeah.
How big was it? Like 3 feet tall?
Well, if you didn't have any friends, it was great.
In lieu of friends, pal around with Johnny Quarterback, Wendy.
How else are you going to practice?
It was the football equivalent, although a little larger. Do you remember Sandlot Slugger from when we were
kids?
Yeah,
the bat would swing.
Little kid with his tongue sticking out of his mouth, and he'd take and you could
you'd
catch
pitch to it?
Yeah, well, yeah. It was on a tee.
Oh, right, and you would that was your fielding practice.
Right, right.
Boy,
right.
A lot of lonely kids when we were growing
back
up.
Back then, yeah.
I guess. Yeah. The stupid toys that we had that they don't have any. One more, how about Super Toe or Super Touch?
Oh, absolutely.
What's that?
I still have those to this day.
Do you really?
Bill might want to talk to you off the air, John.
No, those I love those. Those were classics.
What's that?
Yeah.
Almost the exact same thing, but he would kick the ball as opposed to...
You'd slap him in the top of his head, and he'd kick the football, or he would throw a basketball.
Much like they do today with today's punters around the NFL. If you just give him a biff on the top of the head. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care, John.
Thanks so much. That's why they wear helmets, so you can bop them on the head.
Yeah, that's the main reason they wear helmets. All right. There's a big story that's been brewing the last couple of days, and we have some connection to the story in a weird, odd kind of way. Katie Rich is a Chicagoan and a very, very, very funny woman, and she's been writing for Saturday Night Live. And in her Twitter feed the other day, she kind of took a rip at Barron Trump, the youngest of the Trump children.
And Katie's been on the show a couple of times, and we actually reached out to her. I'm sure she's not going to want to talk about this.
I think this week has probably been a challenging week for her.
I have a couple of comments. Katie Rich is a writer for SNL. She's been with them for a while. And on Friday, after the inauguration, Katie Rich tweeted about President Donald Trump's 10-year-old son, and the tweet went like this. Barron will be this country's first homeschool shooter.
Right.
I take issue with that because on Friday, as we were watching the inauguration, I feel very sorry for Barron Trump. He's 10 years old. To me, it's more awkward for a boy to be in a spotlight situation, whereas Malia and Sasha were quite young when Barack Obama took presidency. But they're girls. To me, I have boys, so I can't compare. But it's easier for a girl to smile and do things. Barron looks a little lost and not really that excited to be there. And he looks awkward, as any 10-year-old boy would. So I feel very sorry for him, and I feel like he didn't pick his parents. He's there because his dad is now the president.
Right. It's always interesting, because I've heard you make the comparison before, as opposed to Sasha and Malia being girls to him being a boy, because that doesn't enter it at all to me. I don't understand that part
boys,
of it.
Boys, in my opinion, and I can say that only because I have boys and I am a girl, I was very precocious and would talk to people quite frequently. And I have one boy who is very much like that, but I have another one who's very shy. And I think a younger boy, in my opinion, having two boys, they're more awkward than girls are because girls grow up quicker.
Right.
So that's, I just feel very sorry for him as I watched him being there going, you know, he got thrust into this. He just was born. You can't pick your parents. And now all of a sudden he's in the midst of this. When they got out of the car during the parade and were walking around, he was kind of digging it, but I don't think the magnitude of what's going on hit him. And I feel very sorry for him. So I feel protective of him.
Does this enter into the argument at all for you? Some people have suggested, nobody's saying conclusively, but some people have suggested that Barron may have some developmental issues. Right.
I've heard that. And obviously
some people have suggested the same of his father, by the way, that he may also have some some issues.
Somebody's flipping off the radio going karma left.
Right.
Karma.
I may also, by the way, I just proved that.
Besides the alleged implication of some issues, it's still I had a shy 10-year-old boy, and something, the mom part of me is like, I just want to swoop in and protect that boy.
I get that. I understand that.
Added, if there are issues, then it's even worse.
Right. It's a sensitive situation to begin with, but if there's something going on with him, then you have a whole different story, don't you?
Yeah, and even without, I just feel like he hasn't chosen to be in the spotlight.
Right.
He's just kind of there. And you know, Katie Rich is really funny.
She's very funny.
She really is. I like her very much. The tweet that she put out, it bothered me a little bit because I'm like, come on, don't go after Barron. And then I didn't think it was that funny because I don't think the whole school shooting thing is funny either.
School shooting, if you're analyzing that particular tweet, and we are, there is nothing funny about a school shooting. Absolutely
right.
Not. So the implied humor, if you're Katie Rich, is he looks like the kind of kid that if something has gone wrong at a school and they show a picture of the kid that's responsible, many times that kid's going to look like Barron Trump looked at the inauguration. So that if you're dissecting what that joke is, the joke is he has the look of a kid who has the ability to do something like this. She's not saying he's going to do it.
Right.
She's not. All she's saying is that's the look. And to be fair, and I'm not trying to take sides, because if it were my kid that somebody was tweeting about at the age of 10, I would also want to be defensive and say,
right,
isn't there an easier target? But I understand what she was going for. Was it funny? That's up to you.
That is up to you.
Right.
I didn't think it would. I just thought she's funnier than that. That's what you say as a mom. Like,
right,
you're funnier than that.
Right.
However, I can understand Katie Rich is a writer for Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
A lot of guys are writers.
Yeah.
Women are paving the way as well. She's really funny. And there's a lot of competition to come out with the funniest stuff and to do it quick.
No question about that.
So I get that, too.
Right.
I was a Twitter friend with her, and I noticed that all of a sudden her Twitter account, like, kind of, it was weird. It wasn't deleted, but it's like, it wasn't available at this time.
Right.
And then I checked later, and she was only approving friends. Like, if you clicked on, you know, following her, it said pending, which means she had to approve it. And now it's back in its full glory, and she has issued an apology. And I just wonder if she really is sorry for it, if NBC or Saturday Night Live is kind of making her apologize.
Right, right.
But I get where the pressure is to be funny quick.
Oh, yeah.
So I get that side of it, too. And, you know, as for being fired, I don't know. I think that's overreacting.
So far, she's not been fired.
She's been suspended.
She was not on last Saturday's show. I guess her name was not in the credits of last Saturday's show. So this happened pretty much immediately, you know. All right, let's discuss this. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 is our number. You can call us there or you can text us there. We're talking about the tweets surrounding Barron Trump. What are your thoughts? Bill and Wendy, WGN. It is Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder with you on WGN. We're talking about a woman who's been on our show a couple times, Katie Rich. She is a Chicagoan, was for many years a performer here at Second City, went on to Saturday Night Live, where she's been a writer for the past several years. She writes many of the better jokes that you hear on Weekend Update. That's part of her job there at Saturday Night Live.
She's very funny.
She's a very funny girl, very nice lady. And we had her on, I think the last time she was on was this summer, right? And
yes.
She was talking about her continuing work with Saturday Night Live. Well, in addition to working on the show, she also tweets from time to time. And after the inauguration, she tweeted this. Barron, now we're, of course, referring to Donald Trump's youngest son, Barron Trump. He's 10 years old. Barron will be this country's first homeschool shooter, she tweeted. Some people thought that was delightful. Some people were offended by it. She has been suspended from her job from Saturday Night Live.
According to someone familiar with the plans at SNL who was not authorized to comment, they said suspended indefinitely. We don't know that to be a fact. All through the weekend, Katie Rich had stopped her Twitter account. Then she reactivated it. And on Monday afternoon, Katie Rich posted a message that said, and I quote, "I sincerely apologize for that insensitive tweet. I deeply regret my actions and offensive words. It was inexcusable, and I'm so sorry."
All right. So is that enough to be let off any hook career-wise or otherwise? You know, she acted quickly. She pulled the tweet down.
Friday to Monday.
You think it's too much time elapsed?
I just know that we all say things. We say the wrong things sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
By the water cooler. Sometimes I've said the wrong things on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter has turned into a place where it's a conversation. You don't double check your spelling and everything. You get it out there immediately. It's almost like just speaking off the cuff now.
Sure.
Donald Trump uses Twitter all the time. I really feel Barron is off limits for people. I don't think the joke is funny. I don't think she should be fired for it, though.
All right, so tell me what is the part. It's a quick tweet. It's only a sentence. I think I know the answer to this, but I want to hear it from you. The offensive part of it is...
so many. I can think of three things. First of all, is Barron Trump didn't ask to be there. He didn't choose his parents. He's there because he has to be. And right. I think to make fun of a 10-year-old boy who cannot defend himself is completely wrong.
All right, but isn't part of what she does, she's a writer for a cutting-edge television show, and she has to, as you said, she has to buzz in quickly in,
she
the,
does.
In the game
I
of
get
Jeopardy.
That.
So you're looking for any angle, if you're making fun of the proceedings of the inauguration, is what she said accurate or inaccurate, and does, I mentioned this earlier, does the fact that he may or may not have some sort of... how do I say this?
Well, it's been rumored that he's on the autism spectrum.
Right.
That's the rumors. Right. We don't know that to be true.
You know, guys, that just is not relevant.
You don't think it is, Steve?
It's not. And I'm uncomfortable even, you know, speculating about something like that. It doesn't matter.
And Rosie O'Donnell, like, kind of started that rumor anyway, and I don't know.
You do not make fun of children in politics. And if you do, you have to you suffer for it. And that's what's happening. This will shake out. She'll be back. She'll be funny again. She crossed the line, and she's being punished for it.
And the fact of mentioning Barron, I've become very protective of him because I have two boys. And just he's not homeschooled, first and foremost. And I don't like the reference to school shootings either. It's like, to me, it's like kind of a triple whammy.
Without a doubt, that's one of those topics. You know, there's... You pick the number, but there are certain topics that just when you look at them, the essence of them, is there any possible thing funny about a school shooting? And the answer to that would be no.
Right.
So if you're dissecting the joke and trying to figure out what was her point, what was she making light of? And I think what she was making light of, and maybe it's not fair for me to speak in her words, but I was also a joke writer when I was doing stand-up, and I guess to some extent on the show. So I think the essence of what she was trying to say is, doesn't this kid look like the kind of kid who would do something like that?
But
that's
see, that
the
bothers
essence.
Me too, because what if your kid has a look, and there are these kids that do these things have parents, and it's like their parents did not raise them to do these things. So again, it's like I feel a 10-year-old boy is being judged.
Right. That's
he looks
fair.
Really cute to me. I mean, he looked a little awkward.
But he
awkward.
Does always look... He does he or doesn't he, though, in any time we've ever seen him, he does look kind of lost, so
maybe...
Because
he's a 10-year-old boy.
But I was a 10-year-old boy.
You're
didn't look
an exception
lost
to
all
the
time.
You weren't in front of millions of people, and your dad wasn't Donald Trump.
Without a doubt, but... Every 10-year-old boy doesn't have the, I'm a 10-year-old boy, I'm just going to walk around looking awkward. And I'm not making this, I'm not saying, and because he looks awkward, he's free, it's bag'em season. Just have at him all day long if you want to. I'm just saying if you're commenting on the weirdness of the proceedings of the inauguration and you want to mention that, you have to admit he looked like he didn't want to be there. He looked lost. And somebody would have said to him, hey, today's a big day for your mom and dad, so you really have to look like you're interested in this.
Again, that's in a perfect world, but the whole country was watching. It's not like,
right.
You know, mom's got an assembly today. I want you to be good because
yeah.
Everybody's going to be watching.
Yeah.
This is like on such a grand
scheme,
that, you
right.
know, I bet there are a lot of 10-year-old boys at some point in their lives, maybe not you, but they look awkward at some point. And I just feel like it's not fair for us to judge an awkward 10-year-old boy.
I get that. I understand that. All right. A lot of people want to weigh in on this. So here's the plan. We're going to quickly break for news. Steve has the news. And then after the news, we'll get your thoughts. I know some of you have been on hold for a couple minutes. Stick tight. We'll get to your calls and your texts. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about a story that has some ties to Chicago. Katie Rich, a Chicagoan now writing for Saturday Night Live, tweeted on Saturday right after the inauguration. I'll read you the tweet again. Now, keep in mind, Barron Trump is the 10-year-old son of Donald Trump. Barron will be this country's first homeschool shooter, she tweeted. Some people thought it was funny. Some people did not think it was funny. She has since been suspended from her job as a writer on Saturday Night Live indefinitely, we have been told. So they don't know for sure if she will be reinstated. She may have lost her job because of this. So what are your thoughts? Is any child off limits if your father is the president of the United States and you are part of the first family? Of course, you become part of the American grain. So is that the kind of thing that discludes you or includes you in something like this? What are your thoughts on this?
I think you keep the kids out of it.
But then at what point, because now Tiffany Trump is 20. Is she 20
or
21?
She's an adult.
Can she be made fun of in
any way?
She's
an adult.
So she can be. So at some point, there's some line of demarcation.
I think when you're an adult,
then you're fair game.
And I don't even, you know, Tiffany, I wouldn't make fun of. The other Trumps are in the limelight and part of the administration, kind of. So,
yeah,
Ivanka and the two boys.
Yeah.
I'm not going to call them what they were called on SNL, but that made me laugh because, you know, they're.
What was the show that referred to them as the American Psycho Twins? Was that Saturday Night Live or was that some other show?
It might have been SNL. I think Beavis and Butthead was also mentioned.
Beavis and Butthead, Uday and Kuse have been mentioned.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
There have been a couple, and on every one of them, I find myself going, oh, that's pretty funny. So how do we train our brains to say,
that's they're
a
adults.
Kid, you can't laugh at that. That's an adult, you can laugh at that.
Well, because kids should be protected
right.
until they're adults.
Right.
I mean, I know you would get very defensive if somebody, you know, wanted to get back at you by slamming your kids.
Any parent would.
Yeah.
Right?
I get it.
Sure.
All right. Hey, Brian.
Hey, guys. Love your show. Just wanted to weigh in on this issue. I think the way we're looking at it, or at least the way I took it, was it's not so much a knock on Barron, you know, having something wrong with him, more a knock on the parent saying that Barron's going to get so fed up with his situation that he's going to take matters into his own hands.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's kind of the way I looked at it.
I didn't even think about
that. I didn't
think
of it that way either.
So does that make it better or worse? Because then you're implying that this kid is going to kill the president of the United States, which isn't, that's not comedy gold either. But
No. Certainly one of those things where it's kind of tongue-in-cheek either way.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's a kid involved, it's school shooting's never funny, but the fact that, you know, Trump can be exasperating even to his own kids would be, I guess, the humor I got of it.
Very,
wow, that's even funnier when you think of it that way. I'm sorry it is, but in my opinion, it's just still going against a kid is what my mom mode kicks in, and I feel like that's territory you shouldn't go in.
Yeah, I definitely see the point there, and that I guess, you know, definitely warranted a response. So,
Thank you.
I just kind of looked at it the other way.
Brian, we appreciate it. That's an interesting
angle.
Thank
you, Brian.
Thanks so much.
And that's, you know, again, Katie Rich is very funny, and I find myself being a flip-flopper on many issues. I don't feel she should be fired over this. She did issue an apology afterwards, which I can find for you. I sincerely apologize for the insensitive tweet. I deeply regret my actions and offensive words. It was inexcusable, and I'm so sorry.
Again, I'm not condoning what she wrote, but when you think about the way her brain is now trained, she writes for not just Saturday Night Live, but her specialty is writing for Weekend Update. So she's quickly having to digest whatever's going on in the news and turning that into a joke and a punchline. So, you know, on a TV situation, you have a couple of other people, the head writer and the producer, to say that one might be a little bit too sharp. Let's hold off on that. But if it's her own personal tweet account, nobody is doing that. Nobody's editing her.
And again, the pressure to get the funny out there right away. From our last caller explaining his view of the joke, I mean, you've written jokes.
Yeah.
It's a better joke if it can be taken two ways. So,
of course.
You know, style-wise, yeah, I just think subject-wise, that's what I have a problem with.
I get that. I understand that.
All right. Matt thinks he's on both sides of this. Hi, Matt.
Hello, folks, and it's much easier for me to be more well-behaved than it was on Friday. Hi, folks.
Good.
All right. Here's my two sides on this.
Yeah.
On one side, you have Malia and Sasha. Now, I'm not going to read to you the entire thing because it'll get me kicked off, but I will read you this part. America hates you, go Trump. That was posted to Malia and or Sasha's wall on their last birthday. Now,
by whom? A writer for somebody or just a disgruntled person?
Disgruntled person. Now, when people become involved in politics, no matter how badly you want your children to stay out of the limelight, they're going to be involved.
Yeah, but that's different. That's just some person. This is a writer for a show.
Here's my other side.
All right, Matt.
I'm going to be quite candid here. I'm not my father. I'm a much better person than my father, in my opinion.
Yeah.
However, you don't choose your parents. You don't. And when you're 10, it's a lot different than when you're 18 or 20 or 25 or however old. And when you're 10 years old, regardless of whether he's on the spectrum or not, the way you look at your parents influences a lot of the coming 10, 20 years of your life. And let me make this clear. School shootings, not funny.
Right.
If it had been something else, maybe we wouldn't even be having this conversation. But she chose school shootings. So that's why we're talking about this. Now, you can't say that Barron doesn't love his parents, and you can't say that his parents don't love Barron. We don't know that.
Right.
And for all intents and purposes, they love each other. But you can't tell a kid that his father is the spawn of Satan and expect him to come out well-adjusted. You need to leave the child alone. He's going to be assaulted enough through Twitter and Facebook and the media for the next 4, maybe even 8 years.
I know, and I feel sorry for him.
Leave the kid out of it. Do I think the Obamas deserve that? God, no. Absolutely not. Do I think Barron deserves that? God, no. Absolutely not. And did I think Bill deserved to get looked at by thousands and thousands of people when he was younger? Yes, because he's a marvel.
Thank you, Matt. We'll let you go on
that
note.
That ended funny. I kind of, I know this is a stretch, but hear me out.
Are you going to translate?
I understand both parts of the argument, not just from our last caller, but I can understand where a child is off limits. His father, you can have that all day, positive or negative, because he ran for president and he became the president.
He wants people to talk
about
him.
But I get that. But I also understand the side of a comedy writer who wants to get attention for a tweet, and she ended up getting kind of a lot of attention for a tweet. So I understand her wanting to be quick on the punch and make fun of something that somebody else wasn't making fun of. Although, I don't know if you saw this. This isn't getting anywhere near the press that Katie Rich is getting, but Julie Bowen from the television show Modern Family was also commenting on Barron Trump and got a little bit of scolding right away, and then that just kind of evaporated.
What did
that
she
just
say? Kind of, was she tweeting?
I've got
Can
all
we take
that.
A break and come back? Because now I'm mad at her.
Oh, all right.
I mean... I don't think Katie Rich has kids. Does Julie Bowen have kids? Because I just feel
Julie
like...
Does
well,
have
yeah,
three
they're
boys.
On her TV every week. You don't.
No, that's a fake family, Steve.
What?
That's just actors.
But see, so that would bother me more, like a mom should know that.
Right.
All right, can you look for that while
yeah,
we
I
take
have
a break?
It. I
and
got
then 312-981-7200. We want to talk about it, and we want to let you do too. So 312-981-7200, Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN.
It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Let me quickly catch you up. If you've been listening, you already know our topic. But if you're new, you're just tuning in, here's what we're talking about. At the inauguration the other day, Barron Trump, the 10-year-old son of Donald Trump, looked a little disinterested at times. So some people have taken to Twitter or Instagram and commented on that, hopefully with a sense of humor. Katie Rich is a writer for Saturday Night Live, a guest on our show a couple of times, very funny lady. And she has been suspended for her tweet where she said, Barron will be this country's first homeschool shooter. So 9 simple words, but 9 simple words that cost her job temporarily. We don't know if she'll be reinstated on Saturday Night Live or not. But what was meant as, I'm guessing, just a light, fun joke wasn't taken that way by many
people. It wasn't
light
or fun. I mean, it isn't. It's pretty serious.
You know, here's the thing. As we mentioned, there's nothing funny about homeschool shooting. There just isn't. But you could also say that about the Holocaust, and yet Springtime for Hitler in The Producers is very, very funny. You could say that about cancer, and yet the character of Cancer Boy in Kids in the Hall is very funny. You could say that about 9/11, and yet I've heard Gilbert Gottfried do jokes about 9/11 that are very funny. And I know to hear that, if you don't know the context, you go, that's impossible. You just mentioned things that could never be funny. So is the joke about the event itself? No, it's about the perception of what the event represents and the people connected with it. I'm not saying she's right in making fun of this kid, but I'm saying there's always something in there that is as awful as those things are.
Agreed. But those are all events, and no, they're not funny. And this is a personal attack on his appearance,
right,
and his actions.
Right.
So that's where I'm bothered by it.
Yeah.
You mentioned something about Julie Bowen.
Julie Bowen plays the mom, Claire Dunphy, on Modern Family. So she, on Instagram, had captions of what you were seeing on television for the inauguration. And then she did a screen grab. Yeah, it was a still photograph, a screen grab, and then she would caption it. So on one of them, it's Donald Trump sitting in the front row, and then Barron is sitting behind and not really paying attention. He's kind of looking off to the side. And she just put, I think Barron is on his Game Boy. I can't say I blame him. On another one, Donald Trump.
And he's looking down and looks like he could be on a Game Boy.
On another one, Donald's looking straight ahead and Barron's behind him. And for some reason, I'm not sure what exactly was said or done at this point, but Barron's head is in his hands. He's got both of his fingers outstretched and they're on his forehead. And he looks terrified. And it says, Barron, the voting majority shares your horror. So that, again, is from Julie Bowen. And she did a series of these. She did a couple of other ones. Well, she was criticized, too, saying, you don't use this 10-year-old kid as a prop. Get your point across in other ways. And she was saying, I'm the mother of three kids myself. I know that they get bored pretty easily. And this was a kid that was bored.
And I feel she wasn't attacking Barron. She was maybe using Barron, but she was definitely attacking Donald.
I think that's safe to say, yeah. I think that's safe.
I don't know what the answers are. I wish Katie Rich would come on and tell her side of the story. I'm sure she's not going to talk about this for a little bit. Jeanette?
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Love your show. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I agree 100%, Wendy, with your initial reaction to this. This is a 10-year-old child, and it should never, whether he's the president's son or not, should not be looked at this way and made fun of this way and had any sort of demeaning comment made toward them. But something else you said kind of bothered me about the girl from SNL. When you had said she's under pressure to be funny, she might be under pressure to be funny at her job, but how is she under pressure to be funny on her own Twitter account?
Because that just promotes herself. I mean, if you follow any comedians or any writers, they post funny things, and to get it out there first is important.
Okay, no, I get that part of it, but again, I what she said about this particular person or any child, I think your point is very well taken. It's a child. And that should be 100% off limits. And, you know, whether it's Trump's son or we can bring up the point, I don't know, did Sasha and Malia look awkward at the first inauguration? Those were two young girls.
They got...
Because I know Bill had said that he looked awkward to him. So I'm just wondering, did Amy Carter look awkward at the inauguration?
I don't remember at the inauguration, but I remember Amy Carter having her moments where... And she was even younger than... I don't even think she was 10. I think she was 7 or 8 when Jimmy Carter was elected. And yeah,
right.
Every kid... There's no kid anywhere that doesn't have moments... Where you
right,
do, you look,
right.
Every adult has moments where they look awkward, right?
So Exactly. So I just think, you know, we've gotten to a point, unfortunately, in our society where things have gotten kind of very, very nasty.
Yeah.
And when there's a political slant to it, it gives it even more credence to be even more nasty. And again, what she said, I think, was totally wrong. Do I think she should be fired over it? Maybe not fired, but... I'm glad they took some sort of action because, you know, it definitely crossed the line.
And Jeanette, I said this earlier. I mean, you know, sometimes you say things and you insert your foot in your mouth. I mean,
you do it
at home, at work. Unfortunately, when we're at work, we have a microphone here. I've said stupid things, and sometimes it happens. And Twitter has become that way of communicating. It's instant.
Right.
It's no one takes a lot of time to think. It's kind of off the cuff. Like speaking is now, you just can put it out there in the Twitterverse and have everybody look at it. So,
no, and you're 100% right. And I guess that is the bad side of social media.
The permanence of it, you mean?
It's the knee-jerkness.
Oh, yeah.
Because everybody wants to get the news and everybody's input immediately, you know, whether you care to hear it or not.
Yeah.
And just like the other actress you were mentioning from Modern Family, you know, again, yeah, does she have to pick? I would think that there's probably 80% of the people or even more percent of the people in the crowd looked bored.
Yeah.
I mean, I think all of the former presidents looked incredibly bored.
Sure, right.
You know, but then to pick on him, I mean, and again, I agree 100% with Wendy. You feel sorry for him.
Yeah.
I really do. And Jeanette, do you have kids?
Situation. I do not.
Okay, because I have kids, and if you
don't try to sell her your kids.
No, I'm not. I want my kids. Right. But, you know, I'm thinking about this too. And Bill, you've been to your daughter's concerts or theater plays. If somebody would capture you at a moment.
Oh, sure.
I mean, I'm usually into it 100%, but there's a moment that maybe I'm yawning or something. So,
absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We're all human, but kids should be kids and not be a target. That's my thought.
I agree.
Jeanette. Appreciate
Thank you, Jeanette.
Can I retract something I said really, really quickly?
No.
I said that
you have to delete your tweet.
Every adult has had an awkward moment, but I forgot. I don't think John Hamm has, but every other adult I think has. I'm almost positive he has.
Tweet
not.
That.
I'll tweet
That's
that.
That's funny.
All right, let's take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy WGN. Cody Keenan is a Chicagoan who has done right well for himself.
Right well,
right
I get
well
it.
For himself.
I get it.
Actually, left well for himself would have been more accurate. After graduating from Northwestern University and Harvard University, he took on a job as speechwriter for our last president, Barack Obama, and he's on the phone right now to talk about his career. Cody, how are you?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Now that it's over, what are your thoughts about the last several years, about what we've just experienced in the last several months? What are your thoughts, Cody? Are you as amazed as the rest of the country seems to be?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you told me when I was a student at Northwestern 10 years ago that within 10 years I'd be writing speeches in the White House for a guy like Barack Obama and that we'd get everything done that we, you know, promised we'd get done pretty much, I wouldn't have believed you for a second.
It's pretty impressive. How many speeches have you written? Is this 3,477? Is that accurate?
3,577.
Oh, but, I was off by 100.
Almost.
And I have an incredible team at the White House. So by no extent are those all mine.
And you are the director of speechwriting for President Barack Obama. I should say former. Director, and pretty apropos that you get to pen a speech for him about your beloved Cubs.
That's even more improbable. If you told me that the last speech I'd write in the White House would be for the world champion Chicago Cubs, I'd have tossed you right out. It's amazing.
Now, were there some stipulations? I know that Barack Obama's a Sox fan, as am I, and he mentioned some White Sox stuff. He did not put on the jersey that he was given, which I noticed right away. But were there some stipulations in directing you as to how to write this speech about the world champion Chicago Cubs?
Yeah, I mean, I should say he's a writer himself, so he's actively involved in every speech. This one, he gave me more leeway than normal. He said, do whatever you want, just don't rag on the White Sox.
I love it.
And then the Cubs, to their credit, were smart enough to bring in away jersey that just says Chicago on the front so you can still wear it.
That was great when he was given that one because it doesn't say Cubs on it. It could kind of go either way. Different colors, but still close enough.
Cody, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, how many of his speeches did he say those words to you? Say whatever you want, just don't rag on the White Sox. Was that a common thing for him to say, or was it just that one instance?
It was just this one. You know, and we've probably done, you know, I don't know, maybe 50 sports events over the years because all the championship teams come.
Yeah.
And, you know, they usually bring some pretty great gifts from a jersey on up. But for the Cubs to bring the actual 44 out of the scoreboard was extraordinary. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen if Rizzo has to pitch for some reason or another in a 30-inning game. But
that's hysterical. Why do you think you got the job, Cody? What did they see in you that made them decide that you were the guy to do this?
Fortunately for me, I think it was just desperation in the beginning. I got connected to his chief speechwriter way back in the beginning of 2007 when the campaign was just starting up, and he was desperate for help. And I'd worked on Capitol Hill for a while writing speeches, so he just kind of grabbed me as his intern, and I've been doing this ever since. It's my first speechwriting job. I've just been doing it for 9.5 years.
Jeez.
Think about that. The improbability of that alone, that's starting at the top of the mountain, isn't it?
Yeah, all of it's improbable. I mean, I was the lowest guy on the totem pole when I first started, and we had an extraordinary staff of people I could learn from. You know, Jon Favreau, who now has the number one podcast in America, was my mentor, both on the campaign and in the White House, and then he handed over the reins to me in 2013.
All right, as a former director of speechwriting for President Barack Obama, Cody Keenan on the line with us, there were pictures of Donald Trump when he was allegedly writing his speech for the inauguration. How much of that comes from the actual president? Like, did Barack Obama sit down and, like, start doing something? Are you all working together? How does that work?
I thought it was strange that the president-elect was writing it with a Sharpie, for one.
Right.
His eyes aren't so good anymore. He needs to write it a little bigger.
But, you know, President Obama's always been a writer. He wrote Dreams for My Father, you know, when I was still 14. So it's not that he needs help. It's just that when you become president, you know, your time is not your own. If he had 48 hours in a day, he'd still probably write his own speeches. And a lot of times he did, you know, especially the bigger ones. We'd go back and forth on 10 drafts for the State of the Union address or something like Charleston. You know, he'd tear up my draft and rewrite big sections of it on legal paper.
How hurtful is that to you when you've worked so hard on a speech and you see it get ripped up by the president? Do you take that personally or just say that's part of the job?
In the beginning, I did. It felt like I wasn't doing my job well, but I gradually came to realize, you know, and especially with talking with him, you know, my job is just to get him something he can work with because he wants to actually work on these things. He said, if you just get me something solid, you know, I'll take it somewhere else, then I'll give it back to you. You take it somewhere else. And ultimately, our best speeches together have been collaborations like that.
Conversely, has there ever been something that former President Obama wrote and you had to go, listen, Prez, I don't think that should be in there?
Anytime he'd rag on the Cubs, I'd try to take it out.
Did you guys have inter-office wagering or anything during, you know, with a Cubs fan and a Sox fan being together?
Low dollar wagering. No, maybe a beer here or there. But he was fired up about this. I mean, he saw, you know, he'd never trade his fandom, but he saw what it meant to the city. And, you know, I watched him watching the parade that Friday morning in his outer office. And, you know, it's just pretty magical to see your city that excited.
What did you think of Donald Trump's inaugural speech, Cody? It's been praised and it's been criticized, and people say that there was a bleak tone to most of it. What did you make of it?
Well, I didn't catch it live because we were out at Andrews Air Force Base saying goodbye to the president and first lady.
Yeah.
I caught it afterwards, and, you know, I didn't see much in there that was surprising. You know, to me, it was still kind of his campaign message, and I think an inaugural address is an opportunity to really reach the entire country, to reach beyond the people who voted for you and support you, and I would have liked to see more of that in there.
Yeah.
You could totally tell. I mean, what I was amazed by was he actually stuck to the speech and didn't kind of go off on his own tangents, which a lot of times gets President Trump in trouble. I just said President Trump. That sounded weird to me.
I heard you say it.
But, you know, just in my own personal opinion, when you would see Barack Obama give a speech, it felt so heartfelt and it was so conversational. And we know he was reading it, but did he practice it a million times or just he believed and felt what he was reading?
No, the good thing about, you know, he'd go through every draft, even for smaller speeches, and make edits and then oftentimes rework it himself. So by the time he delivered it live, he knew every word that was in there. He's very precise with his word choice and his edits. So whether it's on a teleprompter or the page, he's comfortable with what's in there because he's written it himself. And, you know, conversational is always what we're going for. You can't always get there in wonky policy speeches, but, you know, he always views a speech as a story and as a conversation with the people who are listening.
Did you write in there, insert song here, sing like Al Green, you know, or did he just, was that off the cuff?
People always ask that. No. And the answer is no. And there was that time in the State of the Union address where I think it was 2 years ago, he said, I have no more elections to run. And Republicans started cheering. And he said, I know because I won both of them.
Yeah.
And people asked, did you put that in there? And I said, how could I? I had no idea that that would actually happen. But he did for Charleston. He mentioned to a couple of us that morning, you know, if it feels right, I might actually sing the verses in there. And I said, go for it.
Cody, before I got into radio, I was a stand-up comic for 10 years, and there's a certain personality and there's a certain cadence to doing stand-up comedy. And I know that once you've been the president of the United States, you're not looking to be on Evening at the Improv, but he's got the timing and the pacing of a guy who's got stand-up comedy in him. Do you use that when you're writing speeches for him? Do you say, this is a guy who knows how to sell a story and tell it right and make it punchline off at the end? Do you ever do that?
It makes it so much easier that he's got, you know, he's got kind of a good sense of wry comic timing.
Yeah.
And he's always looked at Washington with kind of a detached eye, and that's when he can be at his funniest. But I'll, you know, also say that anytime we've ever done comedy dinners for him or speeches for those things, those are the most collaborative processes we do. We bring back in former speechwriters. We take in submissions from late night comics. I mean, that is a big team effort every time. And you have to have a thick skin because maybe only one or two of your jokes actually make the final product.
Yeah.
Did you write in the mic drop when he did that, or was that his? Was that ad-libbed?
That we did plan. We actually had another microphone underneath the podium for him to grab.
Awesome. He really did such a good job. Bill, you're right. When we were watching his farewell address, we're like, it actually was the Cubs at the White House.
Yeah.
It's like, man, this president could really be a stand-up comic. He's so smooth over everything.
It makes it so much easier for us. And he gets the joke when he reads through it.
That helps.
You know, for many of us, Cody, we didn't have the honor of meeting him and certainly not working with him. But he seems to be painted by pretty much everybody who's ever dealt with him as a fair, decent guy. You see him that way, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, that was one of the best parts about working for him is what you see is what you get. I mean, the only difference with public Obama and private Obama is his language is probably a little more colorful in private. But he's just as generous and kind as you would expect him to be.
You know, he said that the other day, that in his private times, he's more prone to a swear word or two. Did it ever get out of hand, or was it just how did he handle himself in that respect?
I've never seen him go off on a colorful tirade, if that's what you're asking. But
he doesn't seem the type.
No. Yeah, I've only seen him angry twice, you know, and one was when Congress refused to act on background checks after Newtown. And the other was self-inflicted when healthcare.gov wasn't working in the first couple of months.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah.
You don't have to answer this honestly, but, you know, President Barack Obama was a former smoker and had stopped smoking and used the nicotine patch, used the gum. You never saw him out back of the White House copping a butt?
I can confirm. No one ever believes it. He really did quit. I think it was either late 09 or early 10, but never, ever again.
Good for him.
What happened?
Yeah, that was real.
To you, Cody, you've been doing this. You've been his speechwriter for how many years?
I've been with him for about 9.5 years.
9.5 years. So what happens to you now? I mean, I don't know what could look more impressive on a resume than what you've just done, but what do you do with that?
You're actually catching me on my first day of my new job, where we just opened up the offices of the former president. So I'm in here now in his office setting up my computer and getting my passwords and all that stuff. It's like the first day of school all over again.
The Obama Foundation?
I'm not in on Foundation side. I'm in his personal office.
No.
You mean Donald Trump hasn't called you to help him write his speeches for the future?
He hasn't. I'm very disappointed.
What would you do, all kidding aside, if you got that call? If he said, I've admired the work you've done in the past, Cody, and we need a guy like
Make
you.
Make me sound like that. That's what he's going to say.
What do you do then?
That's a great question. No one's asked me that. I'd happily meet with him and talk with him about it. You know, I think anyone who works in the White House, regardless of which side you're on, you immediately get this sense that it's bigger than you and you carry yourself a little bit straighter. And, you know, we all love this country, even if we have different ideas about the direction it should go. So I'd happily go in and talk to anybody there about that. You know, it's a remarkable privilege to be able to work there.
So when you're constructing these speeches, and like you said, you've had 9.5 years of experience with Mr. Obama, you have to kind of paint the picture of America that's an idyllic version. It's the version of America that we all hope and dream it can be. you have to point out some negative things along the way, but your end result is to say, great country with always the chance of being better, right? Is that what's in the tip of your head when you're writing those speeches?
Yes, and you just encapsulated the president's vision of the country perfectly. It's a great country that always has the chance to be better. I mean, his view of America and American exceptionalism is not that we're perfect. It's that we have the capacity to continually make ourselves more perfect, to be self-critical, to look on our flaws. There's nothing unpatriotic in that. We should identify our flaws and then work together to fix them. So we've tried to work that into every speech, you know.
Yeah.
And we certainly came in at a time of incredible crisis. I mean, people forget about it now, but, you had 800,000 Americans losing their job the first month we got there. And we're still trying to find the bathroom, let alone save the global economy. we're proud of the work we've done to leave the next president with a stronger situation than the one that we had.
And you're right, and you said it flat out. We're all in this together, and I do hope Donald Trump is a success because we are in this together. I know the Trump supporters were really getting behind the Make America Great Again, but I know for myself, as I was watching Donald Trump speak, I always felt like, you know, Barack Obama's got to go, come on, it's pretty great right now. Can't we just make it greater, not great again?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think America is pretty great right now. You know, but it's as he said, I think the Selma speech he gave a couple years ago is probably the president's best encapsulation of his vision of America. And it's that, you know, ordinary citizens, you know, sometimes at great risk to themselves, have been the ones who have stood up and said, that's wrong. This is right. Let's work together to fix it. I mean, that's how we've become this incredible country we are.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Cody Keenan, speechwriter, former director of speechwriting for President Barack Obama. What are your rates in case I need a term paper for a kid or something like that?
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Okay, well, let us know, will you?
Yeah, my sister still lives in Chicago. What's up, Carly? So she'll take all requests.
Well, please, if you're around, Cody, we would love to meet you in person because we're both admirers of your work, and we're thrilled for you and hope your new job is a good one.
I'm thrilled to talk to you guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Cody.
Cody Keenan, speechwriter for President Barack Obama.
God, if he has kids and they are in speech class, they are set for life.
It's an advantage, isn't it? All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more show. It's Bill Leffin, it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It was a pleasure talking to Cody Keenan. It's pretty amazing to think that his very first job as speechwriter to someone is Barack Obama that lasts 9.5 years.
Impossible.
That is pretty amazing. Interesting to hear his response if Donald Trump called him up. That
he would listen to him, talk to him.
That's respectful, and
right.
That's good. Although President-elect Donald Trump, I don't have to say elect anymore, right?
Trump. They swore him in. Yeah.
All right. President Trump does not need Cody Keenan because he has Tom Hardy. Actually, he has the character of Bane, who has helped with his speech writing. I don't know if you recall this during the inaugural speech. But a comparison back-to-back of who's first, Kevin? Donald Trump and then Bane.
No.
And giving it back to you, the people.
And we give it back to you, the people.
Your face is priceless.
That's amazing. He's paraphrasing Bane.
Big Batman fan.
I guess he is. All right. We have some news to tell you about.
Thank you, Bertrand.
You're welcome, Snyder.
No problem.
You guys are on a last name basis now? I didn't know that. Good for you.
We are, Bill.
That's better. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Speaking of names, there's a name that's in the news, Kellyanne Conway. You've heard of it?
Yeah.
Did you know that she did stand-up comedy back in 1998?
Seriously? No, I did not know that.
Well, the reason I bring this up is because you being a former stand-up, I wanted you to critique her stand-up ability.
All right.
The Kellyanne Conway video has been posted on New York Daily News. Let me give you some information.
Was this in a comedy club or was this at a political venue? Where did she do stand-up?
Here's what I know. In a video posted to C-SPAN.
Fake news.
Which you know it's funny.
Fake news.
Yes. In a video posted to C-SPAN, time-stamped November 26th, 1998, Kellyanne Conway can be seen taking part in an event called DC's Funniest Celebrity Charity Event.
Oh, yeah.
Conway, then 31, of Polling Company Incorporated, performed a stand-up routine that lasted over 10 minutes.
Or did it just seem that long?
While she should certainly be applauded for stepping up to the stage for charity, there were no doubt a number of force-fed jokes that fell flat.
Oh.
You want to listen to a little of Kellyanne Fitzpatrick at the time.
Before she married Tim Conway?
No, her husband insisted on Fitzpatrick after reading the jokes.
Oh, Steve is sticking around. You want to hear it too, don't you? Let's hear some of Kellyanne Fitzpatrick, a.k.a. Kellyanne Conway, doing stand-up.
Hi, everybody. Hey, thanks so much for having me here tonight. Before I get started, I want to tell you the funniest thing happened to me today. You know when you have one of those days where not one but two things that never, ever happens to you? I'm walking down the street, I look up, and I see Haley's Comet. I get back to the office, and I'm accurately quoted in a Ralph Hello article.
I'll get it.
Two crazy things happen.
But you know, everybody's wondering about my leg. It's the first thing they ask. Tell me what happened to your leg. I'm like, well, everybody heard I was going to be in this comedy show, and they're like, break a leg.
She has a cast on.
Oh.
You think dumb blondes are dumb.
Can you stop it for 1 second? All right. I used that joke freshman year when I was running for class president.
Yeah.
I had hurt my knee, and I had a thigh to ankle cast on.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, hey, I want to be your class president. You might even say, I'll break a leg for you.
Oh, good stuff.
I used that as a senior in high school.
Well.
Can we have more?
Yeah, I would love to hear some more. Sure.
People are groaning.
But I thought about using the leg as an excuse. And I said, now, you know what? I'll just be honest with people. They say, what happened to your leg? And I said, I got surgery. And that's the truth. They assume it's real. Especially here at DC. At home in New Jersey where I got the surgery, people ask you and they listen and they intently hear. It's like, no, what really happened? Did you kick Susan Estridge? What really happened? And they're like, no, I have a congenital deformity. My bones are growing up. Tell me what really happened. So I came up tonight with the five reasons why Kellyanne's foot is really in a cast. Number five, Jennifer Laszlo tripped me on the set of Hannity and Holmes. Number four, having just two of his own, Chris Matthews needed someone else's foot to stick in his mouth. Number three, I went salsa dancing with Jerry Nadler. Number two, I was caught between Jonathan Turley and a camera. And the number one reason why Kellyanne's foot is really in a cast, that Fred Thompson's bizarre and kinky foot fetish.
All right, a lot of these are obviously very inside jokes. Your better comedians don't use Jerry Nadler as a punchline, but she decided to.
But they're all political.
They're all from the Washington, D.C. area. I mean, we still know who Chris Matthews is.
Yeah.
Fred Thompson just died last year, so... I don't think it was because of this, no. But I wouldn't continue to use him as a punchline. This was from when? From 18 or 19 years ago?
Yeah, 1998, November 26th, right before Thanksgiving.
Right.
It was D.C.'s funniest celebrity charity event. She was working for a place called Polling Company, Inc.
No. Oh. All right.
Wow. That lasted her routine, her little... set was 10 minutes long.
You were going to say skit, weren't you?
No, I was going to say sketch, but it wasn't a sketch. I don't use the word skit. Mm-mm. I'm cooler than Mm-mm. that. But her whole routine lasted 10 minutes. That's a long 10 minutes.
I'm not kidding when I say this. If you didn't do stand-up, you'd think 10 minutes isn't that long. But to go up
it's
there
long.
And to do jokes for 10 minutes, although she was getting pretty good response, you have to admit, she was getting... on her worst jokes, polite laughs, and then on a couple of them, she got some pretty big laughs. I would send that tape on to Showtime at the Apollo and see what they want to do with you.
The most animated part of the routine comes at the very end when Kellyanne Conway says, quote, I hope that the star investigation goes on forever, but just in case it doesn't, and I'm looking for a little bit of work. And then she sings the Pundit Blues with a red feather boa wrapped around her neck.
Yeah, that's
one lyric. Read the Star Report, and all I could find is that Clinton's sex life is better than mine.
That's a good closer. You wanna leave him at the end with something big, and she did. Good
no, here's another lyric. Yeah, she's singing. I gotta hear her singing. Can you cue it up to the singing? Here's another line though. No reason to. Oh, okay, we can do it. Here we go. The Pundit Blues.
I got the Pundit Blues.
I've got the pundit blues. All year I've kept the pace. On TV took my place. Lots of makeup on my face and sexy dress of lace. Said the president's a big disgrace. Insist Paula had a case. Chatted about the disaffected base. But now I've got the pundit blues. Kosovo now tops the news. Only guy in my life is Chris Matthews. I've got the pundit blues. Newt left for Georgia on the midnight train. House Republicans made no gains. Lead story now is Saddam Hussein. And I don't know nothing about that, but they'll still invite me to chat. As long as I'm blonde and not too fat, I've got the pundit.
Stop it for just a second. I know, listen, I know this was a while ago, but still.
I'm not sure there's ever been a time in our history where that joke would have, I mean, it's not a joke, it's a song, but did that work on any level? I mean, I know, I get it. She doesn't do this for a living.
And it's a charity thing.
Right.
But, you know, the internet is terrible.
Right.
I wonder if Donald Trump will tweet this, the video link. Here's one of the lyrics. No reason to sob. I'm different from other pundits. I have a day job.
Okay, she won me over. Until then, I wasn't so sure about it, but now I'm hers.
I feel bad because everybody was very quiet during. There was no, like, woo, or there was nothing.
You could hear shock. Couldn't you? You could hear people just being shocked. All right, let's take a quick break. We have a little bit more to go, and then Ro and Anna will tell us what they have on their show. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right, we head back to 1998 to play a little of Kelly Ann Conway, who was performing, I will say, at a charity event. So, you know, you're not going to get the best stuff. But she sure did well on Saturday Night Live.
The name on everybody's lips is gonna be Conway.
She's gotten better.
Yeah.
The chips is gonna be Conway. I'm gonna be a celebrity.
Kate McKinnon has a very good singing voice, doesn't she?
Yeah.
She's very talented.
It was pretty funny. And Kate McKinnon, of course, playing the part of White House advisor Kellyanne Conway.
In a very Broadway style review scene.
Yes, and wondering, you know, why in the world you are showing this unwavering support for Donald Trump and basically showing her secret desire to be famous might be one of the reasons.
Might be. It very well could be. I guess Hollywood likes Mel Gibson again, Wendy, because he was nominated for an Academy Award. He has a movie, Heartbreak Ridge, which I have not seen, but I've heard very good things about, which got a slew of Oscar nominations, not as many as La La Land. We said earlier in the show that it tied an all-time record, 14 nominations. But Mel Gibson celebrating his nomination for an Academy Award for director and also welcoming his ninth child.
Good God,
just
y'all.
Just had another child. I think this is with his third wife. I'm looking to see. Mel Gibson just became a father for the ninth time. The Hacksaw Ridge director and his girlfriend of 2 years, Rosalind Ross, have welcomed their first child together. This according to a rep of Mel Gibson's. The couple's new son, Lars Gerard Gibson, was born on Friday, weighed in at 5 pounds, 5 ounces.
Little one.
Yeah. Gibson is already the father of 8 children.
God, I didn't know he was so fertile.
Prolific.
Virile.
He's very virile.
I believe you said you were virile at the start of the show.
I'm not that kind of virile. At what point do you say to yourself, boy, I've had a lot of kids. I should stop having so many kids. 9's a lot of kids. We have 2, and there's times that I say to myself, if we had 3 kids, I have no idea how we'd survive. Emotionally, yeah. Financially.
Well, he's not worrying about the financially.
No, he's got money. He's got money.
Emotionally, he's probably not that hands-on.
Right.
I'm imagining his new girlfriend is younger than he is.
You'd be shocked to learn that she's quite a bit younger than he is.
Is she younger than any of his kids from previous marriages? Because that's always kind of...
Yeah, because his oldest kids are in their mid-30s. Let's see. The Oscar-winning filmmaker shares 7 children with his first wife, Robin Moore, including a daughter, Hannah, who's 36, and then 7 sons after... God. That sounds
that
biblical.
Poor wife.
I know.
Who had 7 boys.
Hannah's 36, Edward and Christian are 34, William's 31, Lewis is 28, Milo's 26, Thomas is 17, Gibson and Moore, that's his first wife, separated in 2006. And then remember he was married, oh, it says here in the story, he was married to a Russian singer-songwriter, Oksana Grigorievna.
What's her name?
Oksana Jackson.
I don't remember this portion of his life.
They had they have a 7-year-old daughter, Lucia, and now another baby. Now it says the 61-year-old actor, is he 61? He's older than
60. Right.
He's got to be older than 61, doesn't he?
No,
is he really 61?
Well, how old's the new girlfriend?
It does not. It conveniently does not say in this story at ET Online.
Oh,
ET Online dropped the ball on this because I want to know how much younger she is. She looks a lot young. I mean, I know looks can be deceiving, but she looks a lot younger than he is.
I look about 22.
You do look about 22.
Thank you. Is that an alternative fact?
Yes.
He's 61.
He is only 61? I thought he was older than
What's her name?
His current girlfriend is
Rosalind
Ross.
26 years old.
Wow.
Good score, Mel.
Wow.
And his oldest daughter is 36?
36. Hannah's 36 years old.
Isn't that weird?
Wouldn't
that make you uncomfortable
if
your dad was Mel Gibson, first and foremost?
I'd have him do scenes from Braveheart at dinner every night. No matter what.
Wow, 26 years old.
You can take away
great.
Her dinner rolls, but you can't take her freedom. Come on, Dad, just do it, please. One time. I would beg him. Why in my head was he closer to 70? He's not that much older than us, but in my head he's a lot older than us.
More successful.
He's a lot more successful than
so
us.
So you thought, you know, maybe he should be much older than us.
Right. Right. I didn't know he had that many sons in a row. Because, you know, you got a 50-50 shot, obviously. But it's weird. He had a daughter and then 2 sons, 2 twins. 1 man enters, 2 men leave. And then he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 in a row.
He originally denied that he was involved with equestrian vaulter Rosalind Ross. Speaking about her, who he's been dating for 2 years. Here's the quote. This is the best quote
ever. Did
he
go to the prom with her?
She's out of school.
Not by much.
The quote he said, quote, "She is an adult and we dig each other."
Yeah, that's it. Sold.
When did he get to be so hip?
If you're Rosalind Ross's parents and she tells you about her boy, you're going to meet my boyfriend, Mel.
I loved him in Mad Max.
Right.
I am so happy for you, Rosalind.
Yeah. Yep. Congratulations to Mel Gibson. A lot going on for Mel this week as he gets an Oscar nomination and a ninth child. All right, let's do this. A break, and then we'll find out what Ro and Anna have in store for you next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.